Do you overcook your pasta? Do you mix your lights with your darks and tell long, complicated jokes that have no punchline? Do you have trouble wrapping gifts, sound like a hyena when singing happy birthday, and have no idea how the metric system works? Well, if you answered yes to any of the above questions, you may have what it takes to adopt a teen from foster care, because teens don't need perfection, they need you. So if you can't tie a Windsor knot, forget to defrost the chicken, can't tell a latte from a cappuccino, confuse North and South Dakota, overuse commas, throw a frisbee like it's a flounder, and still believe kids really do love lima beans, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts, it's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. For more information on how you can adopt, call 1-888-200-4005 or go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
I'm Rashida Ali Walsh, author and daughter of Muhammad Ali. Parkinson's disease afflicts 1 million people in the United States and Canada. My dad knows that people affected by Parkinson's disease can have meaningful and productive lives. New guidelines from the American Academy of Neurology help neurologists make early, accurate diagnoses and optimize proven and effective therapies. The guidelines also promote screening and treatment of hallucinations, depression, and dementia, which affect many people with Parkinson's disease. They help neurologists track how quickly the disease may progress and tailor treatment, which may include drugs, surgery, exercise, or physical therapy accordingly. Patients should have regular contact with a neurologist to find the correct treatment for them and to help maintain optimal quality of life. Bottom line, the guidelines help improve the care and the lives of people with Parkinson's disease. For more information on the guidelines, visit the American Academy of Neurology at AAN.com.
Nothing can be truer than the phrase, all politics is local. That's why Liz Brown is adding the Automatic Watch to the award-winning Wake Up Calls lineup. Every Monday at 7 a.m., Liz will be joined by Alderman Lewis Reed to discuss the comings and goings of the St. Louis Board of Aldermen. Do you want to know the latest bill passed? Do you want to know why it passed? And do you want to know who voted for and who voted against? Well, you're going to have to join Liz Brown when she talks Aldermanic politics with Alderman Lewis Reed every Monday at 7 a.m. Lewis Reed is going to bring local politics up close and personal, and you never know who else will be joining the discussion. The Aldermanic Watch, every Monday at 7 a.m., only on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air from the brothers of Jesus. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air from the brothers of Jesus.
Time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below, below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution. Brothers,
hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. It's going to be an amazing show today, Wellness 101 at 9 o'clock. We're going to be talking about fluoride and what's wrong with it. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to be doing an amazing show, talking to the parents of the first female soldier to be killed in Iraq. And you know what? Her parents still have questions about what happened to their baby. Was she murdered? Was she raped? Was she killed by her own? Riveting Radio on the Wake Up Call. I'll be back.
City of St. Louis, there is nothing that is more important to me than the education of children, and not just my children, but all children. Unfortunately, not all people feel the same. The state of Missouri is attempting to take over our public schools by eliminating our right to vote for the people that we want to run our school district. Well, you know what? The state is wrong. We live in the city of St. Louis where our children attend public schools, so we should decide who educates our children. Someone needs to stand up and fight for the protection of our children and our votes. That's why I'm going to vote Louis Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen. He is the only candidate in this race who has said no to a state takeover. We need someone who's fighting on our side. So on March 6th, I'm taking my children and I'm going to the polls and I'm voting Louis Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen.
Paid for by committee to elect Louis Reed, Thomas Shepard, Treasurer.
Prizes awarded on WGNU will be held for pickup at the radio station for 30 days. After 30 days, all items become the sole property of WGNU Radio to be disposed of at our discretion. In the case of event tickets, tickets will be held for 30 days or until the date of the event, whichever comes first. Prizes must be picked up at our studios, which are located at 265 Union Boulevard in St. Louis, unless otherwise specified.
This is your Congressman, Lacey Clay, asking for your vote on March 6th to re-elect 26th Ward Alderman Frank Williamson. A vote for Williamson is a vote for continued progress, continued redevelopment, and safer neighborhoods. He is my choice and the right choice to continue leading the ward. Alderman Frank Williamson has earned the right to be your alderman for another 4 years. Vote to re-elect 26th Ward Alderman Frank Williamson on March 6th.
Paid for by Committee to Re-elect Frank Williamson, Thelma Williamson Treasurer.
The Struggle for Fairness on the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
A dedication to all the refugees worldwide. One time.
Say. I remember when we used to sit in a government yard in Brooklyn.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up, get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. How does this make you feel? Nearly 90% of the Army National Guard units in the United States are rated not ready. May I say that again, please? Nearly 90% of the Army National Guard units in the United States are rated not ready. This is according to a congressional commission that released a preliminary report on the state of U.S. military reserve forces. The chairman, Arnold Panaro, chairman of the 13-member Commission on the National Guard and Reserves, it was established by Congress in 2005. Here's a quote. We cannot sustain the National Guard and Reserve on the course that we are on right now. The Department of Defense is not adequately equipping the National Guard for its domestic missions. Now, I just want you to, again, here's what I want. Here's what I want you to feel. We live at a time governed by an administration who has set forth a policy and a practice. A policy and a practice that has poured billions of dollars into Iraq. Millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars are unaccounted for. We're spending billions of dollars of every month on this nasty, nasty, nasty occupation. We're not winning. We're not going to win. We are dying. And money is being sucked into a rat hole. And understand that the soldiers that are over there are not equipped either. They don't have the tanks. They don't have the flapjackets. They don't have the equipment. The soldiers that are over there are not being fed because they've privatized, this administration has privatized the folks that do that. So the soldiers over there who are fighting for democracy are ill-equipped, not equipped to do that. We're not winning. We're not going to win. And then the soldiers that are over here, the National Guards, that are supposed to be here to protect our democracy, well, they don't have equipment either because of the decisions made by the same group of people that put the National Guard over there. So you gotta ask yourself, boys and girls, you got to ask yourself, how trillions of dollars that we're spending and nobody is equipped to do anything? Nobody is equipped, no soldier that is supposed to be defending us is equipped to do jack. Where the heck is the money going? This is outrageous. 90% of the National Guard units in the United States, I didn't say over in Iraq, sweetie, didn't say that. I said the boys and girls that are here. It doesn't take much to get a tank to New Orleans. It doesn't take much to get a tank over to Cairo, Illinois. You don't have to ship it across 3,000 miles of ocean. Don't got to do that. Why aren't our National Guard boys and girls, why aren't they equipped? How is it that 90% of them are not equipped to protect the democracy that we pay them to do? And because we have an F student in charge and a bunch of enablers of this F student and a bunch of enablers. This is ridiculous. This is insane. The Department of Defense is not adequately equipping the National Guard for its domestic missions. And I just want to say, I do not have a degree in weatherology, but have y'all looked out the window? Have you read about what the storms have been doing to this nation as of late? Can anybody say Katrina? And this report is saying that, oh, they got soldiers down there to point guns at people in New Orleans. But did they have the food and stuff? You saw the National Guard here in St. Louis. When we had our 80,000, 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 people out of power windstorm. All they did was pick up tree limbs. This is insane. The Department of Defense, now mind you, they asked for a budget of several billion dollars this year, more than last year. Where the H-E double toothpicks, where the money going? Where the money going? Yeah, these are extraordinary times. These are extraordinary. 90% of the National Guard is not ready for the domestic issues. Here, where, what do they say? What do they say? Where democracy was born. How you like me now, baby? How you like me now? My name is Liz Brown. Stay with me, oh, I ain't done yet.
The Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. 70 eastbound at North Broadway and Adelaide. There's an accident. Right lane's blocked. It was at Adelaide, first reported westbound, but it's actually eastbound. Delore in both directions, eastbound and westbound at 55 is closed due to overpass failure. 55 remains open, but you can use Itasca or Walsh as a bypass to get around the Delore intersection there. Northbound 55 at Butler Hill all the way to 270. Look for heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270. Look for heavy volume there. Northbound 270 at 44 and Doherty Ferry. You can expect heavy volume around the 44 interchange. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry through Graham Hanley. Look for traffic to be building. Eastbound 40 from Maryville Center through Mason. Then again from Lindbergh through McKnight. You can expect some delays. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79. That traffic is starting to build this hour. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge all the way back through 3rd Street. You can expect some heavy volume there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well into the landing from mid-span on in. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. For today, windy, partly cloudy in the morning and early afternoon, becoming mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 40s. This evening, blustery, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. Saturday, colder, mostly cloudy, chance of flurries, high in the upper 30s. Saturday evening, mostly cloudy in the evening. Partly cloudy overnight with a low in the lower 20s, and Sunday, partly sunny skies with a high only in the mid-40s. Currently, the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 37 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 37 as well. The wind chill out there makes it feel like it's 20 degrees. That is a look at this hour, 30 degrees, excuse me. That is a look at this hour's traffic and weather. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. More of Riveting Radio with Liz Brown. It's the award-winning wake-up call that's up next. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hey, girl. You made it just in time. Pastor's getting ready to start.
Girl, I really needed to be here this Sunday.
What happened?
You didn't hear?
Uh-uh.
Well, last week, Jennifer Florida, you know, the older woman?
Mm-hmm.
Her son went into the hospital for brain surgery.
Oh, my God. How old is he?
12 or 13. That's not the worst part. Girl, the worst part is that a bunch of aldermen went up to Jim Shrewsbury, and they asked him to say a special prayer for the child, because, you know, they always start their meetings with a prayer.
That's right. They asked a special prayer, too.
Yeah, well, not last week. Because that Jim Shrewsbury said no.
What? He said no to a child having brain surgery?
Girl, that's right. And they said it's just because Jennifer Florida and her ward endorsed Lewis Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen.
Lord, I'm going to have to pray for Jim Shrewsbury.
Well, I'm going to pray for him, too. But I'm certainly not going to vote for him.
Amen to that.
Paid for by the 6th Ward Progressive Democrats, Paul Shannon, Treasurer.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in health care providers, and we at Connect Care want you to know that sometimes change can be good. Connect Care, still connected to the community. Connect Care is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of Connect Care's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At Connect Care, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your health care needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At Connect Care, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
About this fear I've had so long. When
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. I want to give you a heads up on Riveting Radio today. Boy, fasten your seatbelts. And for in the 9 o'clock hour, I'll be talking to, of course, Dr. Rosa Kincaid, Wellness 101. Our guest will be Arlis Terpesta, RN. She's going to be talking about fluoride and why it's a deadly poison in our water and what it does to women, and particularly women of African descent. Oh, yeah. We're going to be talking about that in Wellness 101. And then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking to the parents, Dr. John Johnson and Mrs. Linda Johnson, parents of Private Lavina Johnson, a 19-year-old baby from Florissant who died in Iraq. She died a year and a half ago. She was the first female in the state of Missouri to be killed in Iraq. Her parents believe that her death, clouded in mystery, marred by murder and cover-up. That's going to be in the 8 o'clock hour. And then at 7, in the 7 o'clock hour, I'm going to be talking to a senior researcher at the Center on Budget Policy Priorities about poverty in the United States. For the first time, poverty has risen during an economic recovery period. Up is down, down is up. We have a whole lot of stuff to talk about, folks. Riveting Radio. Stay with me. 1-877-920-WGNU. Dan.
Good morning, Liz. How are you today?
I am outstanding.
Great. I just wanted to comment on the Iraqi war and its consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this war has really torn away the veil of who runs this country. I think, you know, the financial elite have really shown themselves now, because even though we're being bogged down in this terrible war, they want to continue it for that 120 billion barrels of oil that's in Iraq, and to protect Israel. You know, that we're spending $2 billion a week there. Just think what that could do in this nation itself. I mean, as far as
90%, wait a minute. 90% of our National Guard that are here in the United States, whose job is to protect our democracy and domestic issues, 90% of them are not ready due to absence of equipment.
Yes, I believe that. Oh, I think it's all worn out. And just think what that $2 billion could do towards education, health care. And you just spoke about poverty in this country. What could that do for our average citizens? And we're there because of that 120 billion barrels of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's disgusting. And then I'm almost ready to not vote on a national level anymore.
Well, can't.
I'm really discouraged. I've been voting since 1964. I've never missed an election. And I'm really, really, really discouraged.
Now is not the time to be discouraged.
But then you look at all the leading Republicans, the three or four leading Democrats, and they're so infested with this corporate and big money that I don't think either one of them are going to give a hoot about any of us.
Then look what the us has done. The US has taken a broom and brushed out a whole lot of Republicans, okay?
Yes, yeah.
And that has given some change, but it certainly is not enough change. The US of us cannot sit down now and say, it's too hard. I don't think that everybody's going to change, because the US of us made some changes last election.
Yes, we
So
are.
The US of us has to get up and do some more, because they're not going to do anything unless we make them.
You're exactly right.
So there. we cannot disconnect, unplug ourselves from this political process.
Way we're going to have to hold their feet to the fire and make them do something.
Well, and taking them out helps.
Oh yeah, well,
taking them out, at least some of them.
The Democrats give us some crumbs.
And you know what, Dan? Crumbs are not enough.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, Dan.
You're right.
Thank you so much.
Have a good weekend.
You too. 1-877-920-WGNU. Tim.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
I know I called earlier this week and I gave you that story about Shaquille O'Neal. It's performed at the White House. Well, I have another one for you.
You know what, Tim? I just don't have time to talk to you. I can't take no more. I can't take no more. What you got?
I got another one for you to make you, to bog you down this weekend.
What you got?
Okay, the All-Star game that was just played 2 weeks ago in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, NBA star Tracy McGrady.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA was talking about hosting an All-Star game next year in New Orleans.
Okay.
Tracy McGrady came out and said that he would not go to New Orleans because the security is not there. And I thought that was absolutely embarrassing to himself and to us.
How old is he? How old is Tracy?
He's about 25, 26 years old.
Okay. He sounds a bit like a dumb bunny.
I mean, come on. I mean, you can't be fake around your own people.
Ain't that
but
some
you'd
stuff.
Rather go to Las Vegas or somewhere else.
Wait a minute. Las Vegas is safe.
Yeah, well, according to them. I just thought that was a shame.
And so. That is absolutely foolishness. What a dumb bunny.
Nice weekend.
All right, take care of yourself. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. You know what? I think the original place, you know, Las Vegas seems to have claimed this phrase, what goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas. I think that phrase started in New Orleans. Truly. I think that phrase stopped, because I know I left some stories in New Orleans, you know, so I believe that phrase started in New Orleans. That's the most ridiculous thing I've heard in some time. Dumb bunny. 1-877-920-WGNU. I'm scared to go to New Orleans. 1-877. Baby, you don't know that the National Guard were pointing their guns at people that look like you. The people that were being kept across the bridge largely look, from coming across the bridge, look like you. Woo! 1-877-920-WGNU.
Well, good morning, Miss Brown.
Good morning,
Matt.
How
are you this beautiful day?
I'm outstanding.
To the man that called about he's thinking about not voting on the national level. If ever in the history of America, people, if you have never voted before, 2008, please get to the polls. Because we are in trouble. You know, I was watching the news last night.
No, wait a minute. 2008. I know he said national, but we would be remiss in saying there's an election coming up on Tuesday. Get to the polls on Tuesday.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. Get out and vote on Tuesday. Please go to the polls and vote on Tuesday. And let's speak about this hospital you have on Main Street, Ms. Brown. I was looking at that last night. These soldiers, they go out, they get bangled up, lose their limbs, lose their eyesight. Then they drag them in a roach-infested room at the hospital. Then when you break the news, you get fired.
Well,
then I hire another man. He breaks the news. He's going to get fired, too.
And what's interesting is that, and you're talking about Walter Reed.
Walter Reed Hospital.
And
it's
the,
a good hospital.
And the person that was fired is a man by the name of Major General George W. Waitman. He was the commanding general of the North Atlantic Regional Medical Command, as well as Walter Reed Hospital. And the interesting thing about the firing of him, and they said that they fired him because they've lost trust and confidence in him. He's headed Walter Reed since August 25th, 2006. What the heck did he do? August, September, October, November, December, January, February. He's been there 7 months, and it's his fault?
And they're thinking about getting rid of the other man that they put in his place.
And it's his fault? He was there for 7 months, and it's his fault?
And, you know, again, I don't know, I guess it's the feeling. I was watching again. You know, the soldiers supply their own blood supply, and they're running a little short. So they was drawing blood from these soldiers, and all, at the same time, that was an insurgent or whoever had tried to kill him, and he didn't get killed. They put them in the hospital too, and they have to give him blood. So they asked one soldier, what do you think about giving blood to the man that tried to kill you? He said, he's a human being, sir. I can see that. You know, they
well,
got just
bless
as many
his...
enemies in there as there is American soldiers.
Bless his heart.
Yeah, I mean, it's what kind of
heart.
Serve do they get these soldiers?
Got to roll. Thanks,
Thank
Mac. 1-877-920-WGNU. This is Liz Brown. Good googly muggly. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Stay with me. I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black owned and black operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
I am a parent, and I live in the city of St. Louis. There is nothing that is more important to me than the education of children. And not just my children, but all children. Unfortunately, not all people feel the same. The state of Missouri is attempting to take over our public schools by eliminating our right to vote for the people that we want to run our school district. Well, you know what? The state is wrong. We live in the city of St. Louis where our children attend public schools, so we should decide who educates our children. Someone needs to stand up and fight for the protection of our children and our votes. That's why I'm going to vote Louis Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen. He is the only candidate in this race who has said no to a state takeover. We need someone who's fighting on our side. So on March 6th, I'm taking my children and I'm going to the polls and I'm voting Louis Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen.
Paid for by committee to elect Louis Reed, Thomas Shepard, Treasurer.
Hi, I'm Randy Grimm. Join me Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for Animal Tales on AM 920 WGNU. Animals have always mattered to me, so that's why we discuss the issues that matter most to you and your animal companions. Join us as our special guests and I examine puppy mills, parrots, turtles, ferrets, and answer your questions about pet care. For 2 hours of fur, friends, and fun every week, join me, Randy Grimm, for Animal Tales, Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on AM 920 WGNU. Woof.
You're listening to Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU Radio, 920 on your AM dial and at WGNU.net.
Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the wake-up call. My name is Liz Brown. Say my name, 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much business to tend to. Good morning, Charles Quincy Troop.
Good morning, my sister Liz Brown. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I am wonderful. I like what you said. Say my name, say my name, say my name.
Say my name.
But this morning, my name is Darlene Green, Comptroller of the City of St. Louis.
Why is that?
Because she is one of the strongest and one of the most magnificent, intelligent, committed, loyal, principled politician that I've seen in my life. She does what she's going to say she's going to do, and if she sees the need to alter or change her course in the process and keep her word to people that she made a commitment to, she does that. And when I read that horrendous, ridiculous, stupid, self-serving article in the St. Louis American by a black person, Wale Amusa, a black male, denigrating a black woman because Slave was angry with her, and BJC was angry with her, and some other people was angry with her because she made a commitment to the environmentalist people as well as a commitment to black aldermen and carried out that commitment to the letter of the law. Even after she made the commitment and did what she said she was going to do, then they put that ridiculous, unnecessary, self-serving article in the St. Louis American saying that we should get rid of Darlene Green, or threatening her or telling her what she better do in order to please and curry favors from Slay and other white people is beyond bizarre. I mean, that is completely ridiculous. And I think that, you know, the black people need to wake up. And I think Darlene Green need to be glorified, not villainized.
Give us some specifics, Quince, in terms of what were the things that she did specifically with respect to the BJC deal that made Wale Amusa and others start attack her.
Well, what she did was she opposed Slay.
Mm-hmm.
And she was opposed to what Slay was doing. She wouldn't let him, bulldog her because she was made a commitment to the environmentalist people.
What commitment did she make?
On the park, people, to not give up the park.
Okay. Not to sell the park off.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she didn't know that at the same time, Greg Carter and I had talked, and some other black aldermen, Kennedy, appointed us to go and meet with BJC to talk about what we needed in order to make our health status and create an environment that was wholesome and friendly for North St. Louis residents and North St. Louis parks as well in terms of health care and activities and goods and services for our children. And we went and negotiated that deal. Conway called us extortionists on the floor yesterday at the board, and we're going to probably have another war today. But Darlene Green saw what we had done. She saw the value in it.
And say specifically what was done.
Well, what we did, we negotiated a deal for a trauma center in North St. Louis.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing.
And we negotiated monies, about $100 million in parks, about $160 million in parks over the next, about $150 million in parks over the next 100 years to come to North St. Louis. We negotiated like $50 million for services for our youth and community centers, scholarships for poor kids to go to the Y, Matthews, Dickey's, Herbert Hoover's, and other facilities so we can create some organized activities for young black people in the evenings. And we negotiated grant writing that they would help us to get from Washington University and help us start development of North St. Louis with their contracts to develop and then come on the Black Caucus Foundation Board as a participant and help us to raise funds and resources so we can start the regentrification of our children and our education, extracurricular activities for these children in the evenings and to help them to grow and to develop. And we had all this on the table. When we put this on the table, Darlene had already changed. She said, I will take this. What you all have is great, But we got to put it in the law, and so we can codify it so nobody can change it, and it will be there forever. In the whole 100 years of this lease, we will have this coming. So she took what we did, and she made it better, and she made it work, and she made it real. We did a good job. We had a great beginning. But what she did was say, so we had to go back and redo the bill. We had to incorporate what we did into the bill in order to make it real forever. And then Slay didn't want to do this.
And Shrewsbury didn't want to do
Darlene
it.
Said,
wait a minute. Shrewsbury didn't want to do it.
And Shrewsbury didn't want to do it either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, well, you know, Shrewsbury didn't want to do it. Shrewsbury was worse than Slade.
Okay, but we had to say that so the people.
Yeah, well, it is. Shrewsbury and Slade didn't want to do it. And Darlene said that you're going to do it, or I won't sign the lease. You'll do it, or you won't get anything. But she was back in the black caucus up when she did that. And then for Wally to go on in a newspaper and denigrate her because she made it legal and she codified it in law.
And his criticism, how did he articulate his criticism of that deal that brings hundreds of millions of dollars to North St. Louis Parks, that puts a trauma center in North St. Louis, that brings scholarship money for children and youth programs for children? What did he articulate as his criticism of that?
Because she did not kiss Slade's rump.
Oh, well.
That's what it was about. That's all it was about.
But wait a minute. Didn't
she did exactly what, like I said on the floor yesterday, and Freeman got up and supported it, and Kennedy got up and supported her. But this article was crazy because she did exactly what she told us she would do, and she did exactly what she had to do to codify it. And she did exactly what she told the environmentalist people that she was going to do. So she kept her commitment. She kept her word.
But wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know that I can't write an article and have it printed in The American.
He paid for a whole page.
He paid for a page.
In the St. Louis American.
They still didn't have to take it.
Darlene Green.
But they still didn't have to take that. They still didn't have to take the money for that now.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to even go there because you know we know that, but it's a paid ad. So a paid ad is hard. You know, you say, well, I paid for this. So if you pay for it, then it's difficult for people to say we want equal space and time.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
To rebut what he's saying.
Mm.
But when you read that article.
Where'd the money come from to take out the front full page ad?
From his consulting firm.
And the consulting firm was this consulting firm involved with trying to get Darlene Green to change her mind?
He went to Darlene Green and asked
who paid for that
to provide her services, and she told him she didn't need her service. So it was a crazy, insane ego tripping that I've ever seen in my life, and to sit up and say that we don't need the comptroller. You got to be out of your mind. I'm just saying black people need to read that article and they need to get out and vote.
Quincy Troop, thank you so much for that.
All right.
My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. An amazing day on the Wake Up Call today. Wellness 101 at 9 o'clock. We're going to talk with, of course, Dr. Rosa Kincaid, MD, but we're also going to be talking about fluoride. We're going to have a guest, Arliss Trespera, talking about fluoride as a poison placed in our water system against our will. Then in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking to two parents who have lost their baby. Dr. John Johnson and Mrs. Linda Johnson, the parents of Private Lavina Johnson, you know her, the 19-year-old baby from Florissant who was killed in Iraq. She died a year and a half ago. She was the first female from Missouri to die in the Iraq War. Her story, according to her parents, is clouded in mystery and marred by murder and cover-up. And then in the next hour, I'm going to be talking to a senior researcher at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Poverty has been rising for the last several years, and this is the first time it's happened during an economic recovery period. What the, huh? We're going to be talking to Arlick Sherman. in the next hour. Many, many things, many, many things. That's why they call it riveting radio. You can't go nowhere. You have to sit in your car. You can't get into work. You got to sit in your house. You can't get dressed. It's riveting radio. And I'm proud to bring it to you. Stay with me for the next few hours. I'm Liz Brown. Hold on.
A struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied.
For the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. At least nine people are now confirmed dead from a tornado that slammed into a high school in Enterprise, Alabama. Assistant Superintendent Bob Ferris says nothing could prepare him, the community, for this, especially not the parents whose kids were killed yesterday.
As best I can tell, they're holding up well, although I don't think it's really sunk in yet. I'm sure that's the case even with me at this point.
The tornado was just one of many twisters from the Midwest to the Gulf Coast. At least 20 people were killed. The Weather Channel's Wayne Verno.
After today, there'll be a slow progression over the next several days of more towards a drier weather pattern across much of the country. And it looks like we're not going to be dealing with any significant storm systems at least through the middle of next week.
Slippery roads may have caused a bus to flip off an overhead ramp onto an expressway in Atlanta, killing at least six people.
The driver got off on the exit ramp and continued across Northside Drive over the bridge embankment onto I-75 below.
Atlanta Police Officer Joe Cobb. Anna Nicole Smith will be laid to rest today in the Bahamas.
One important person in Anna Nicole Smith's life will be absent from her funeral.
Dani Lynn, her daughter, will not attend the services because of the expected onslaught of media that will be here.
Entertainment Tonight co-host Mark Steinis is in Nassau covering the funeral.
The country singing recording artist Joe Nichols will perform two songs.
Mourners at the church where the funeral is being held will be surrounded by Smith's favorite color, pink.
It will be decorated in pink flowers and white calla lilies.
A smaller, more private graveside funeral will be held following the church service. David Blaustein, ABC News.
A legal victory for Mohammed Al-Fayed, whose son was killed with Princess Diana in a Paris car crash. A London court agreed with Al-Fayed that a jury should preside over the official inquest into the 1997 accident. This is ABC News.
Hey, Ken. Picking up a prescription?
Yeah, my erosive acid reflux.
Me too. I take Protonix, pantoprazole sodium.
Does it work?
One Protonix tablet every morning helps control daytime, even nighttime, acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms too?
Yep. It even helped repair acid reflux damage, and I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan. Hey, where are you going?
To call my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonixSavings.com or call 888-5-REFLUX to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you.
Well, first there were records, and then there were music videos, and now the whole experience is going to get a little bit more intimate. ABC's Deirdre Bryant explains.
Director James Cameron developed and tested a digital stereo camera system when he filmed an unreleased 3D version of Gwen Stefani's Wind It Up. Officials at Interscope Geffen AM Records loved it, and they've announced a partnership with Cameron. They plan to bring 3D concert films, music videos, commercials, and stage shows to movie theaters within the next 6 months. The technology puts the audience on stage with the performers. Cameron says fans will be closer to their favorite artists than they've ever been before. Deirdre Bryant, ABC News.
It's butts out on more college campuses. At least 43 schools from California to New Jersey say they're smoke-free or in the process of going that way. Many are smaller schools. Bigger schools are still dealing with that whole right to light up in the dorm thing. Nearly 31% of full-time college students say they smoke. I'm Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Friday, an area highway was closed off last night after the partial collapse of an overpass. A portion of the sidewalk on the upper deck of the Delore Bridge over Interstate 55 collapsed down onto the freeway, injuring at least one person. Police say the bridge is still standing, but its condition is not known. MoDOT crews have been called in to check on the bridge. Both northbound and southbound lanes of I-55 are blocked at the Delore overpass. The accused kidnapper of Sean Hornbeck and Ben Ownby is facing more charges. Yesterday, 41-year-old Michael Devlin of Kirkwood was charged with taking pornographic photos and videos of one of the youths. The indictment marks the first federal charges filed against Devlin. In addition to those charges, he also faces several state charges. He has pleaded not guilty to all of those charges. Devlin remains in the Franklin County Jail on $1 million bond. Finally this hour, St. Louis County Executive Charlie Dooley says he will support Illinois' King Bridge concept. The plan would call for building a companion bridge to the Martin Luther King Bridge. Dooley told the East-West Gateway Council of Governments this week that he will endorse the idea if Illinois officials prove it would cost Missouri no more than $25 million and could open to traffic by late 2014. Illinois officials have said they could build the bridge with state money, a congressional earmark, and $25 million in federal funds that would otherwise go to Missouri. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. Let's take a look at your traffic for this hour. Eastbound 78 Bryan through 79, look for slow traffic. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street on the PSV, look for some delays. Delore east and westbound at 55 is closed due to the overpass failure. 55 remains open, but you can use an alternate like Itasca or Walsh to get around the Delore 55 interchange. Eastbound 70 between 270 and St. Charles Rock Road, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason, then again from Ballast through McKnight, you can expect some delays due to sunshine. Westbound 44 between 109 and Six Flags, there's an accident on the shoulder. It's near Six Flags. It's on the right shoulder, so look for slow traffic there. Northbound 270 at Gravoy through Doherty Ferry, look for slow traffic around the 44 interchange. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry into Graham Hanley, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 at the 70 exit lanes, look for them to be slow due to the interchange volume there. Northbound 55 from Butler Hill through 270, they've got some slow traffic around the 270-255 interchange. Northbound Illinois Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge is slow. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well from mid-span into the landing. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. For today, look forward to mostly sunny skies, or partly cloudy this morning and early afternoon, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. Windy with a high in the upper 40s. For this evening, blustery, mostly cloudy, low in the upper 20s. Saturday, colder, mostly cloudy, chance of flurries with a high only in the upper 30s. Saturday evening, mostly cloudy in the evening, partly cloudy overnight with a low in the lower 20s. And Sunday, mostly sunny with a high around 40. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 38 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 38 as well. The wind chill makes it feel like it's 33. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Going news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who would dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. We have much business to tend to. We have a busy morning ahead of us. We have a busy morning ahead of us in the 9 o'clock hour. We have Dr. Rosa Kincaid, MD, part of our Wellness 101 program. We're going to be talking about fluoride in that program, that hour. And the dangers of fluoride. And then next in the 8 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking to the parents of a young woman, the first woman from Missouri, first soldier, female soldier from Missouri, the parents of Private Lavina Johnson. One eight seven seven 920 WGNU. We need to take a break. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Stay with me.
Jeffrey Boyd, and I'm asking for your vote on March 6th to re-elect me as your alderman for the 22nd Ward. Together, we've leveraged over $850,000 in home repair dollars for senior citizens and the disabled. We have the highest attendance at monthly ward meetings across the city every month. We've torn down over 116 dangerous buildings that were neglected for as long as 15 years. We've paved over 47 alleys and streets. 4 years ago, Jones and Ozer said no one will pay $100,000 to move into our neighborhoods, but we've proved them wrong. New homeowners have paid as much as $129,000 for their new home. Together, we're making a difference, and we're making our neighborhoods stronger. Let's continue what we've started. Vote for me, Jeffrey Boyd, on Tuesday, March 6th.
Paid for by citizens to elect Jeffrey L. Boyd, Patrice A. Johnson Boyd, Treasurer.
This is 2nd Ward Alderman Dion Flowers, and I'm voting for Lewis Reed for President of the Board of Aldermen in the March 6th Democratic primary. I have had the opportunity to work with Alderman Reed. I have seen him work to help move St. Louis forward. His tenacity and drive has helped bring jobs, new housing, and steady economic growth to the 6th Ward, into all the city. It was Lewis Reed who came up with the idea for Bike St. Louis. Lewis Reed worked to pass the first neighborhood tax increment financing for Lafayette Square. And as president of the Board of Aldermen, he will use his endless energy to help build a better St. Louis for everyone. On Tuesday, March 6th, join me, Alderwoman Dionne Flowers, and vote for Lewis Reed, president of the Board of Aldermen. Building one St. Louis, vote Reed.
Paid for by Citizens for Dionne Flowers, Jill Flowers, treasurer.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My goodness, we have a much to talk about this day. We have a lot to talk about, and I want to remind you of a discussion that we had earlier this week about poverty, rising. And rising in the last few years, and rising against something that has never happened before. The first time poverty has risen for the first time in the last several years, and it's the first time that it has happened during an economic recovery period. Up is down, down is up. We need to talk about poverty. And to facilitate that conversation, I have joining me from Washington, D.C., Arlux Sherman, the senior researcher at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Arlock, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
Very well.
I'm looking at this information, and what does it mean what should we take out of the fact that poverty has been rising for the last several years, and that it is now risen during an economic recovery period? What do we make of that?
Yeah, this is a little unique of a period that we're in. The economy is growing overall, but the benefits are not making their way down to the middle as much as usual, and certainly not to the bottom. We saw for the first 4 years of the recovery that the poverty rate kept rising. It rose in 2002, rose in 2003, 2004, stayed flat in 2005, and at the same time, the proportion of the poor who were the very poorest of the poor, living on family incomes below half the poverty line, that rose. So that the poor have never been poorer than they are now. In terms of how far below the poverty line they are on average, the number of Americans who live below half the poverty line, meaning we're talking about annual incomes below $5,000 for an individual or $10,000 about for a family of four. The number of those extremely poor Americans is 16 million, which is up 26% in the last 5 years.
That's shocking.
Really shocking.
And we're talking about an individual that is earning less than $5,000 a year.
That's right. That's what they're reporting in their cash income. They may get food stamps. They may have some under the table income, but what we do see with these families is that they are uniformly having very high rates of hardship and so forth. It really does seem to be a real problem. In Missouri, that there are 308,000 such individuals below half the poverty line in 2005, according to the Census Bureau. That's up 27% in the last 5 years.
When we look at our nation, do we see this all across the nation? And where do these extremely poor people live?
You know, it does seem to be everywhere. There are, you know, while it's disproportionately we're talking about central cities and talking about minority families beyond their fair share of the burden of this problem, we do see, in terms of absolute numbers, that it's spread out. There are more outside the cities than inside. There are more who are white, not Hispanic, than who are members of minority groups. So it's a growing problem for all segments, all racial and ethnic groups, and geographic areas.
I'm looking at this map where the extremely poor live, and what's interesting to me is that the fastest growth are in states like Idaho, are states like Kansas, Maine, Colorado, Wisconsin, Minnesota. These are not your typical, you know, where you would think that the urban centers are. This is where the fastest growth is taking place. I'm looking at this number of Minnesota. The extremely poor number has gone up 62%.
What you see is it used to be a rather rare phenomenon, and now it's spreading in a lot of places, and because of that, the way, you know, these percentage increases are calculated, if you're starting from a small group and you add a modest amount to it, you may get a very large percentage increase. So that's part of it. So in other words, what that is saying is this is spreading into areas where there really wasn't much of it before. It's somewhat widespread.
And one of the reports is saying that Kansas, one of Kansas's richest areas, Johnson County, led the nation's largest county with a 358% increase in severely poor, from 2,000 people to 9,000 people. What's causing this?
I don't think we know all of the causes, but we have looked closely at a closely related phenomenon for single-parent families, and this is, I think, only going to be one piece of the answer, but for single-parent families who have held a job and lost it, it does appear that there is much less of a public safety net, public set of programs there to protect them and catch them if they lose a job, so that now we're seeing a pattern of single mother households going for months at a time with no major source of cash income, a pattern that we didn't see before. These, again, were families who had a job, but when they lose a job, no longer can they count on the same kind of protections that they might have gotten 10 years ago.
And what are the when we're talking about the extremely poor, what do they look like? I mean, their ages, their races. What do they look like?
They look a lot like other low-income American families. This does not seem to be concentrated solely among the stereotypical picture of minority, inner-city, high school dropout. Again, maybe slightly more so, slightly disproportionately those things, but it does seem to look be that this is a cross-section of low-income people who have fallen into this situation without protection. It does seem that the economy has gotten more volatile over time. Less, you know, employment is less reliable, even if you know, you might be able to get a better wage than you had 10 years ago. That doesn't mean that you can count on that job being there next month. There also seems to be this much broader trend in the economy, not limited to any type of family in particular, where the gains of economic growth just aren't trickling down. This is the first economic recovery we've seen on record going back over 50 years where more of the nation's economic growth, income growth, went to corporate profits than to workers' wages and salaries.
And it's the first time in over 50 years.
That's correct.
When we look at these, again, these extremely poor people, are we seeing a new increase of the elderly being included in this group of folks, or are we seeing an increase in number of children being put into this extremely poor category?
All of the above, and it doesn't. I haven't yet seen any one group pop out as driving this result. You know, it's not immigrants, it's not children or seniors who are driving the pattern. So it's troubling in that regard. I would say it's there is a role of policy here. There is certainly a failure of policy to respond, of public policies to respond to this problem. And in fact, if anything, public policies have been making it the situation a little worse.
What public policies have been making it worse?
Well, there's been a failure to raise the minimum wage. There have been a range of cutbacks in some services like child care from their peak years. We've had, in Missouri, there's been this train of federal cuts that have been passed on to the state and resulted in state cuts in assistance. And unfortunately, it's a pattern that continues. But, the president just last month introduced his budget proposals that would, for example, eliminate meals for 10,000 Missouri seniors, that would reduce funding for the low-income home energy assistance program for, heating bills and so forth. By over $10 million, enough to serve 22,000 Missourians. There has been a cut proposed for $4 million in the Head Start program and on down the line. Now, there is, what the president has emphasized instead and what Congress has gone along with for the last few years is just very, very massive upper-end tax cuts. That's where the money is going. In fact, there's so much going to tax cuts that despite some of these social service cuts, the tax cuts are so much larger that it's been adding to the deficit, and the president's latest budget proposal is no exception. It would add to the budget deficit in each of the coming 5 years.
I'm looking at this quote that doesn't seem to me that got a lot of attention. Alan Greenspan said, there is a really serious problem here, as I've mentioned many times before this House committee, in the consequence of concentration of income that in consequent concentration of income that is rising. This speaks again to the growth not being broadly shared, but Alan Greenspan said it, but what has come out of that? We don't see anything, have we seen any legislation coming out to address something that Alan Greenspan said in July of 2005?
Yeah, I think has taken a while for the system, for Washington as a whole to respond to that. I think the last Congress was not inclined to do much about that. Grapple with that issue. I think the new Congress is a little different. They're just getting rolling. There have been some new things done in terms of providing a little more money for low-income housing. There have been a lot of hearings on other things that can be done, an effort to raise the minimum wage. So I think Now, voters responded. Congress is starting to respond. But it's been slow so far. And really, we're facing the question of what to do about the tax cuts down there.
Oh, we're going to take a break. I'm talking to Arlux Sherman. He's the senior researcher at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. When we come back, I'd like to talk about how health care has factored into these extraordinary numbers for the extremely poor. My name is Liz Brown. I'll be back. Stay with me.
Good morning, St. Louis. 30 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at your traffic and your weather for the 7 o'clock hour. Northbound 270 at Tesson Ferry and Doherty Ferry. There's an accident. Right lane's blocked. That's at Gravois Road. It's in the entrance ramp to Gravois Road. Expect stop-and-go traffic there. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through 79. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street on the PSB. Look for slow traffic. Delore eastbound and westbound is closed at 55 due to overpass failure. You can use an alternate Itasca or Walsh to get bypass that intersection. 55 remains open. Eastbound 70 at Bryan, or eastbound 70 between 270 and St. Charles Rock Road. Look for some delays. Westbound 270 from Illinois 3 into the Chain of Rocks Bridge. Look for some slow traffic. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry through Graham Hanley. Look for some delays there as well. Northbound 270 between Dorset and 70. Look for slow traffic in the right lanes as you approach 70. Eastbound 40 between Spady and McKnight. Look for some slowdowns. Northbound 55 from Butler Hill through 270. Look for some delays. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270. Look for some delays there. Martin Luther King Bridge traffic is looking good from midspan all the way into the landing, and westbound 40 between McCausland and 170. Look for no delays this hour. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. For today, look forward to windy, partly cloudy in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. High in the upper 40s this evening. Blustery, mostly cloudy, low in the upper 20s. Saturday, colder, mostly cloudy. Chance of flurries with a high only in the upper 30s. Saturday evening, mostly cloudy in the evening. Partly cloudy overnight with a low in the lower 20s. And Sunday, mostly sunny, high in the mid 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 38 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 37, but the wind chill makes it feel like it's 32. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
This is your Congressman, Lacy Clay, asking for your vote on March 6th to re-elect 26th Ward Alderman Frank Williamson, a vote for Williamson.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920. WGNU discusses the issues that matter most to you every day. And if you have a relationship problem with a friend, coworker, or family member, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in every Monday through Friday afternoon from 2 until 4 and take on the day with me, Dr. Laura, on AM 920 WGNU.
It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Just to be with you.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I am talking to the senior researcher at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He's joining us from Washington, D.C., Arlok Sherman. And Arlok, one of the things that I'm looking at when we are trying to figure out why we have so many extremely poor people, does the issue of health care and health care coverage and does that factor into this?
Health care is an extremely important part of both families' finances, of government assistance for the poor and for what kind of drives people into situations of financial crisis, in the sense that they may not be able to keep a job when they or a family member that they're caring for is sick. They may not be able to pay their bills if they're also trying to pay off a hospital doctor bill. And so it's not directly part of the Census Bureau's calculation of who's or not, but it factors in all kinds of ways, and the pattern that we've seen is a major shedding of employer coverage, employer-based health care insurance for large numbers of Americans. And while there have been some state and federal efforts that have bucked that trend and actually sustained or in some years slightly expanded health insurance coverage for children, it's not true for the other members of the family, and it's not true for people in childless households. So it's a major issue on all kinds of fronts.
One of the things that is discussed when the issue of poverty comes up, one of the issues that people make comment on is the gap between the haves and the have-nots, and it's widening. Why is that significant, and why should we be concerned about a widening gap between the haves and the have-nots?
A couple of reasons. Basic fairness. I don't think people think it's right that a large group of Americans is contributing to the growing productivity of the nation, and most of the fruits of that increase are going to someone else in a way that hasn't happened historically in this country during economic recoveries before. I'm talking here again about the fact that we've never before had a period where half of the national income growth has gone to profits rather than wages and salaries. Besides fairness, I think there are also issues of what does it do to everyone else and the health of the society when there's a group growing up without adequate resources. We know that if children grow up below the poverty line, and certainly below half the poverty line, that ends up being the children with the health care problems, the disproportionate educational problems, and a lifetime of not being able to contribute their full potential to society. It ends up being very costly, according to a recent Government Accounting Office study. Contributing to a slower economic growth for the nation. Conversely, if you do, and a couple communities have undertaken to make sure that low-income families do get adequate income, and that income has been found in careful experiments to improve their school performance and by a not inconsiderable margin.
I guess I find this very, very, very just shocking that we have 16 million people that are extremely poor. And is there a fix for this that can take place in any short period of time? Because we're talking about people that need basics. We're talking about people that need the most fundamental types of things. Is there a fix that could take place in a short period of time?
I think there are several different fixes, and some take longer than others, but I think most of them are within our reach, in the sense they are things we know how to do. Quality preschool, you know, if we invested in making sure everyone who was eligible got access to the Head Start program, and that we ensured that the Head Start program was able to invest in quality services. If we ensured that people had access to a good job at a minimum wage, and there's a decent track record there on things we can do to ensure that, make sure that everyone does get health care coverage, does get access to good child care assistance, so they can work. There are a range of things that we can undertake that are quite doable. And I don't think on the issue of cost, I think one thing that the last few years have proven is that, it's possible to shift huge sums of money around, and we have shifted them to the top through the kind of tax cuts that have been enacted, and those are time-limited tax cuts. If we don't extend them and were to redirect some of that money to more pressing social needs, I think we would be living in a different kind of country with a different kind of trend or trajectory in some of these problems at the bottom.
But the fact is that it's going to take years to correct this?
No question that really to see the bulk of the problem solved will take years, but I don't think it's hard to get started in a way that will have lasting impact.
And the ways that this has to change are political? Are those the only ways that we can address a problem of 16 million people in extreme poverty?
That has to be a big part of the solution. You know, that's not to say there isn't a terribly crucial role for community organizations, for families and individuals themselves stepping up.
Because we're being told by this administration that, you know, charities step up, let the private sector address this problem. Can the private sector do that?
Charities will be the first to tell you that this is way out of their league. This is above their pay grade. They do not have the resources to tackle it on this kind of scale.
And, Arlick, where can people find out more information about their? Is there a website for the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities?
If you have access to the web, www.cbpp, that's C as in cat, B as in boy, P as in Peter, .org, cbpp.org.
And you all have done quite an extensive report on this.
That's right, and you'll also see on our website some of the cuts in services to Missouri and a number of other related topics and possible solutions. The things that have been working.
Arlick Sherman, Senior Researcher at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Wake Up Call.
Thank you, Liz.
1-877-920-WGNU. Just a heads up on the next couple of hours here on the Wake Up Call. In the 9 o'clock hour, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Rosa Kincaid, MD. She is joining us as always for Wellness 101 on Wellness 101. And the guest is going to be, we're going to be talking about fluoride. We're going to be talking about that fluoride is a deadly poison. Huh? Isn't it in our toothpaste? We're going to be talking about that in the 9 o'clock hour when Dr. Rosa Kincaid and I talk to Alice Terpasa, RN, about fluoride. And check it out. She's going to be telling us that fluoride has an effect, a worse effect, on black females. Oh, we're going to have an interesting conversation. And then in the next hour, we're going to be joined by the parents of a young woman, the first woman soldier, to be killed in Iraq. Her parents are going to join us to talk about her death a year and a half ago and the military's cover-up of how their baby died. Oh, man, we have a whole lot of stuff to talk about. My name is Liz Brown. Get to me. I'll be back after this break. Place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Last year, Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones were the leaders of not one fraudulent failed recall attempt in the 22nd Ward, but two. They paid workers in excess of $3,000 to get names on a petition by any means necessary. Can you believe it? More than eight dead people's names were on those petitions. That's right, dead people. This disgusting act perpetrated the biggest voter fraud in the city of St. Louis, and it's still under investigation today. What were they thinking? Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones served the 22nd Ward for over 20 years. On their watch, major department stores like Woolworth and others along Martin Luther King Drive have left. Not only did the stores abandon our neighborhoods, so did Ozier and Jones. They had a bad habit of not returning phone calls, few community meetings, and no real concern for the residents. With this type of behavior, why should we believe anything that Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones say? On March 6th, let's say no to Ozier. Stick with Boyd. Going backwards should not be an option.
Paid for by Citizens to Elect Jeffrey O. Boyd, Patrice A. Johnson Boyd, Treasurer.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At ConnectCare, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At ConnectCare, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At ConnectCare, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At ConnectCare, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At ConnectCare, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At ConnectCare, we still provide urgent care. And at ConnectCare, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at ConnectCare, but we're still connected to you. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
This is Lizbeth Tanz, co-host of Women Inspiring Women's Authors on the Air program. Join us each Friday from 1 to 2 as we explore the world of writing with local and not-so-local authors. That's Authors on the Air, Fridays 1 to 2 on AM 920 WGNU.
A weekly newspaper is reporting that Jeffrey Boyd is acting like Slade's boy. You decide if it's true.
Jeffrey Boyd sponsored a bill that would have stripped Darlene Green of most of her power.
Jeffrey Boyd supports Slay and the Republican request to a state takeover of our schools.
Jeffrey Boyd helps Slay to deny 22nd Ward voters their right to a recall election by using political intimidation.
Jeffrey Boyd gave the 22nd Ward's free home repair grant money to Catholic charities.
Jeffrey Boyd has made promises he has not kept.
Does he sound like Francis Slay's boy?
What do you think?
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slowly. Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide.
Ready or not, Here I come. My name is Liz Brown. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, 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 much business to tend to. Otis, good morning.
Yes, Liz, part of that 16 million people are going to be coming to our little agencies around the city today for a can of food to survive today. We spend just 75% of our time fighting with government regulations and government folks who are trying to put us out of business, stop us from doing what we're doing by making it hard, regulating us so much. I mean, they're passing laws. You know, for the poor people who look in garbage cans, they pass laws to put locks on the dumpsters so folks can't look for food. They pass laws so that restaurant owners who have extra food are afraid to give it to us. In Chicago, where people stand in line for food, instead of helping people who are standing in line, they passed a regulation that you can't stand in line outside of a soup kitchen for food. They just want the folks to disappear. And, you know, and I just want to tell you that that is a concerted effort to just make those 16 million invisible, to make them go away. I have to fight every day.
But you know what? The scary part is, Otis, is that, yes, you're absolutely right that there is a concerted effort to make these people disappear. The scary part is that they're growing and growing and growing and growing. Yeah. There will come a time where it's going to be inescapable.
Yeah, we're covered up by them today. We can't find enough food. The places where we look for food are disappearing because in the places that had food, you know, in richer parts of the city and county, now they're busy feeding their own, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that is happening. I guarantee you, you know, in the Bible, Jesus said to folks once, he said, heal thyself. We'd better start taking care of each other and our neighbors. And you know, I'm gonna, you know, I have a lady cop who's trying to stop me from giving out food on the street. You want me to just stop so the people will go away? I am not gonna do it at risk of getting arrested. And I've been doing that for near 35 years. And you know, I want to tell you that, we need to feed our neighbors. Well, look at our neighbors. Help ourselves. If there are black people who have a little bit more, share it, because I guarantee you it's stopped being shared at places where I used to go out in Kirkwood and Manchester and places like that. Them people have discovered, and just like the lady was saying, it is right there around them now, those very poor people. Thank you, Liz.
Thanks for your call, Otis. 1-877-920-WGNU. Craig.
Hey, good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
Your last guest made me think, Liz, back to President Bill Clinton and how a lot of women were forced off of welfare to take these minimum wage jobs.
That's right. And now they are off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in these two or three minimum wage jobs. They can't see their children. They can't raise their children. They don't have health care. They're taking these awful jobs, and their children are suffering as a result of it. Thank you, Bill Clinton.
And Liz, he was saying that one of the main reasons why it's getting much worse is because now they're going for stretches without any cash income.
Fact.
Because these jobs, they know they can fire these people, Liz, and before they get out the door, their replacement could be walking in the door.
That's fact.
And these employers know that, you know.
With that welfare to work piece, they've created a permanent, one of the reasons why a lot of people hire undocumented workers is because they can make an undocumented worker do things that you can't make a citizen do. And that is take all kinds of bad treatment. Well, with the creation of welfare to work, we've created another type of a class that has the similar life experience of undocumented workers. Because these women are forced in. Remember, some of those jobs were so dangerous. They had women out there moving toxic waste stuff in New York City. They had them doing all kinds of things because they have a forced labor pool. And that's a sin and a shame.
Yeah.
We're creating a forced labor pool of people. No more welfare benefits. Get out there and get a job, or you have nothing.
All right, thanks, Liz.
Thanks for your call. 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Robin, good morning.
That goes back to the statement I had made about the child support payments for the non-custodial parents.
Mm-hmm.
They have them now on these EBC-type sure e-cards, like
mm-hmm.
a debit card.
Mm-hmm.
And, some parents, they get maybe $50 a month or $100 a month in child support, and they can't use that card unless it's a fee taken out.
That's just ridiculous.
And then a lot of parents, they don't have banking accounts, checking accounts, or savings accounts. You either have to have direct deposit or you have to use this debit card. And each time that you use
But wait a minute, let's talk about getting a bank account today.
Mm-hmm.
Bank accounts, some banks won't let you have a bank account if you have bad credit.
That's right.
Some banks won't let you have, they put up all kinds of restrictions for your accounts. And these bank accounts can put people into all kinds of debt.
That's right.
The bank accounts, with $50 fees and $40
$75
fees for ridiculous stuff, charging somebody to cash a check written on that bank, charging you $5 to go. If you don't have an account in that bank and the check is written on that bank, they're going to take $5 out?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, a lot of people don't go through banks anymore, but the idea that these poor people out here that are getting their money for child support, finally getting their money
mm-hmm.
for child support.
They still have to pay money.
They still have to pay money.
If you get $50 and you go to an ATM machine, they're going to take out $1.50. So you can't get $50. You got to get $40.
Wow.
It's a lot of people out here that are really suffering.
Thanks.
They don't care.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
1-877-920-WGNU. Mary.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Liz, did Otis leave a number? I didn't have a number where I could reach him out when he was on West Florissant.
He didn't leave a number this morning.
Okay. I'd like to say this quickly, if I may. I don't know how many people in your listening audience has actually been to see, even down to Reverend Rice's, how some of those whole families are sitting there in the winter when they have, he let so many people in, but the city audience often says that he can't have so many people in his shelter down there on Locust.
Mm-hmm.
And they have it's the saddest thing to go down there. I go down there and I give him ever so often, then I go in there and talk with him and leave stuff. And he has families sitting, or ladies sitting on the steps, and it was cold, that they have to push out of the door because he has too many people in there in the winter when it's real cold. And here's the lady sitting there. I don't know their situation, but they are homeless, and she has two little kids sitting there with her on the step, and she's pregnant, and she's just sitting there with the old dirty-looking coat wrapped around her. That is the saddest thing to see, and I agree with one of your callers. We have to learn to help people that's less fortunate than us and give. There's so many people say it's sad and go to church and donate money to churches, and they don't think about others that need in need. And it's sad to see whole families sitting down there that doesn't even have a home in the winter, sitting on those steps.
And the number for Otis, Mary, is 652-7383.
652-7383. Okay, and I hope more people will begin to help others. Even if you don't have but a little bit, just share what you have and you will be blessed.
Thanks for your call, and that's a fact. My name is Liz Brown, and the next hour, it's going to be a very, 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 I think, powerful discussion. The parents of the first female soldier to be killed in Iraq from Missouri are going to be joining me on the air to talk about what happened to their daughter. A year and a half later, they're still being stonewalled. My name is Liz Brown. You don't want to miss this conversation in the next hour. Stay with me.
You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing your wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Alden.
We felt it through the doors because it blew all of our windows in the choir room and the doors were flying open.
She's a student at Enterprise High School in Alabama, where at least 9 people were killed yesterday by a tornado, one of a series of twisters that left at least 20 people dead from the Midwest to the Gulf Coast. More from ABC's Aaron Katursky outside the school.
Daria, the community here in Enterprise, Alabama, is an absolute mess. The mayor says there are 4 spots in town that were hard hit by tornadoes, probably none more than the one where I'm standing, right in front of Enterprise High School. The roof torn off, parts of the building have collapsed, the trees that line the roads leading to this high school are overturned, there are power lines dangling precariously from utility poles. 8 students were killed. We're told they were huddled in the hallway and the walls simply collapsed around them. Daria?
The stormy conditions also left roads slippery in Atlanta, and that may have caused a bus to roll off an overhead ramp and onto I-75 below. At least 6 people were killed. This man watched it happen.
I can look right out where I work at. I work at Waffle. I see all the police cars and all of the fire trucks there.
Those on board the bus are believed to have been members of a baseball team traveling from Ohio to Florida. The body of Anna Nicole Smith is on its way to the Bahamas for her funeral later today.
It's playing out in the way that we've seen it play out for the last several weeks. You know, there's lots of camera attention down here, a lot of tabloid attention, scaffolds going up for camera people right at the graveyard site. It is clearly going to be a very hectic and unusual day here in Nassau.
ABC's Deborah Roberts in the Bahamas. A jury will hear the evidence in the British inquest into the death of Princess Diana and her boyfriend Dodi Fayed. The ruling today is a victory for Fayed's father, who had been battling for a jury to decide what caused their deaths in the 1997 Paris car crash. A coroner was planning to hear the case. This is ABC News. Hello?
Awful night.
Beth?
My erosive acid reflux.
Haven't you heard of Protonix Pantoprazole Sodium?
What?
Protonix. One daily tablet helped control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms, too?
Yep, even helped repair acid reflux damage. Plus, I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan.
Right. Gotta go.
Where?
To see my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonixSavings.com or call 866-794-ACID to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you. Check out your medicine cabinet. You know that cough syrup that you bought for your kids? Well, it may not be safe. Here's ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey.
Every parent knows it. Persuading a child to take cough medicine,
take it down really quick and swallow,
can be a challenge. Now, food and drug regulators are taking a new look at cough remedies for kids. The New York Times reports the FDA is revisiting the risks and benefits of popular medicine like Triamine.
The medicine of motherhood.
Higher than normal doses, say medical experts, can affect the heart. One FDA doctor tells the Times most over-the-counter cold medicines for children have not been adequately tested. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
It's now legal to shack up in South Dakota. The state's repealed an old law that made it a crime for a man and a woman to live together out of wedlock. That meant about 23,000 people in that state were breaking the law. Most of them were senior citizens. Now you just can't say you're married if you're not. That would be fraud. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brinsmeyer with your WGNU News Update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Friday, St. Louis police are looking for a man who shot and injured an officer early yesterday morning. 40-year-old Kelly McGinnis was shot in the arm and chin while driving on Lee Avenue. McGinnis was treated for his injuries and released from the hospital in the afternoon. Shell casings were found at the scene of the shooting, which were believed to be from a 9mm gun. Police Chief Joe Mokwa says he considers it a random, unprovoked attack. Legislators are pushing for seatbelts on school buses after several recent accidents. Missouri State Representative Tim Fluke is proposing that children wear lap shoulder safety belts in all new buses starting in 2008. Fluke says he wants to help districts pay for the upgrade with state-distributed money. However, the Missouri School Boards Association doesn't see the need for the plan. Upgrading each bus in the state would cost at least $6,000. The funding would come from an extra surcharge of a few dollars on speeding and parking tickets written by state police. Finally this hour, the Cardinals hit 3 solo home runs yesterday, but it wasn't enough as the New York Mets defeated St. Louis 4-3 in preseason action at Port St. Lucie. Mets starter Tom Glavine pitched 2 scoreless innings, while Cards ace Chris Carpenter allowed 2 runs in the first before settling down for the next 2 frames. The two teams meet again this afternoon at 12:05 at the Cards spring training home in Jupiter, Florida. Former Mets closer Braden Looper is scheduled to start the game for the Cardinals against Chan Ho Park. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Southbound 270 at Doherty Ferry in Manchester is an accident. 3 lanes are blocked. It's north of Manchester. 3 left lanes are closed due to an overturned vehicle, so expect slow traffic there. There'll be stop traffic on northbound 270 between 55 and 44. It'll be closed due to an accident. Actually, they just removed the vehicle, so now it is open this hour. Stop and go from 55 through 44 due to an accident is cleared. That's at Gravois Road. Westbound 40 between 170 and McKnight. Look for stop and go traffic due to a broken water main at McKnight and 40. The ramp to westbound 40 and McKnight is closed. You need to use the alternate, which is the Brentwood exit. Both east and westbound Delore at 55, look for it to be closed due to an overpass failure. 55 is open, but you can use Itasca or Walsh to get to 55 or get past that interchange there. Westbound 55 or westbound Kingbridge traffic looks good in the landing. Westbound 5570 is slow. Go into the landing. Westbound 270 from Illinois Route 3 to Chain of Rocks Bridge, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 70 between T.R. Hughes and 79, and then again from 270 through St. Charles Rock Road. Look for some delays. Westbound 5570 from 64 split into the PSB. You can expect some delays. Eastbound 40 between Spady and McKnight. Look for some slowdowns. Eastbound 40 between Maryville Center and Mason Road. Look for heavy volume there. Northbound 55 from Arsenal through 44. It is slow. And then again from Butler Hill through 270. You can expect some delays. And also Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270 Exchange. Look for some slowdowns there as well. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. For today, windy, partly cloudy in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day with a high in the upper 40s this evening. Blustery, mostly cloudy, low in the upper 20s. Saturday, colder, mostly cloudy, chance of flurries, high in the upper 30s. Saturday evening, mostly cloudy in the evening, partly cloudy overnight with a low in the lower 20s. Then on Sunday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 37 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 38. The wind chill makes it feel like it's 32. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather, or your traffic and weather, at least in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, brother.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
Believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. The number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. We have much business to tend to here in the city of St. Louis. I want to get to some bookkeeping matters, and then I want to get to the story that we're going to be discussing. Going to be discussing that today. But let me get to a couple of bookkeeping matters. Doris.
Yes, good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
If I may, can I announce that we'll be a forum at 1525 Orchard at the North Park Church tomorrow between Shrewsbury and Lewis Reeves. And for the listening audience, if they would like to attend, they are welcome.
What time is it?
10:30 Saturday morning.
10:30 Saturday morning, and the
yes.
address again, please.
Yes, 1525 Orchard. At the Riverview Circle next to the Nance School.
Okay, very good. Is that part of the Northside Neighborhood Association?
Right, the Northside Neighborhood Association.
Very good. Tomorrow at 10:30.
10:30. And if I can say a little something about the toothpaste.
Oh, actually, we're going to have to save that for the next hour. That's
okay,
our guest for the next.
Back,
absolutely.
All right, then. Thank you.
All right. 1-877-920-WGNU in the 9 o'clock hour, Wellness 101 with Dr. Rosa Kincaid, MD. We will have a nurse on, a guest on, to talk about fluoride and its impact on our bodies and its impact on our children and why we need to be concerned about it being in our water and in our toothpaste. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. When we come back, I'm going to be talking to the parents of Miss Lavina Johnson, a beautiful, beautiful young woman, the first casualty, the first female casualty from the state of Missouri in Iraq. How did this baby die? Why isn't the military talking about it? What are they covering up? I'm going to have a conversation with Dr. John Johnson and Mrs. Linda Johnson, the parents of Private Lavina Johnson. Stay with me.
Hi, this is Danny Glover, and you're listening to The Wake Up Call with Liz Brown on WGNU.
This is Alderman Jeffrey Boyd, and I'm asking for your vote on March 6th to reelect me as your alderman for the 22nd Ward. Together, we've leveraged over $850,000 in home repair dollars for senior citizens and the disabled. We have the highest attendance at monthly ward meetings across the city every month. We've torn down over 116 dangerous buildings that were neglected for as long as 15 years. We've paved over 47 alleys and streets. 4 years ago, Jones and Ozer said no one will pay $100,000 to move into our neighborhoods, but we've proved them wrong. New homeowners have paid as much as $129,000 for their new home. Together, we're making a difference, and we're making our neighborhood stronger. Let's continue what we've started. Vote for me, Jeffrey Boyd, on Tuesday, March 6th.
Paid for by citizens to elect Jeffrey L. Boyd, Patrice A. Johnson Boyd, Treasurer.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down. That's 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
Real life on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Talk to me while I'm listening now. While this love has a voice that we both can hear. Before you let it go, greatest love of. Won't you please talk to me while I'm listening?
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour I am talking about the death of Lavina Johnson. I have with me on the phone the parents of Lavina Johnson, Dr. John Johnson and Mrs. Linda Johnson. Dr. Johnson, Mrs. Johnson, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
I guess I want to begin with Dr. Johnson. Tell us about Lavina.
Well, Lavina was a very intelligent person. She was an honor roll student. She was a well-liked female. She carried herself very well. She was very sophisticated, and she was extremely ambitious. And she was the type of person, once she started something, she always finished it up. And so she was kind of wanting to not go to college right away, even though we had prepared for her to go. And she said she wanted to go into the Army, and we were totally shocked.
Mrs. Johnson, what did you think when your baby told you, with all of these wonderful things, honor roll and focus and commitment to completing tasks, when she said, I want to go in the military? What did you think?
I was totally shocked, but she and her dad had been talking about it for some time, without my knowledge, of course, but knowing the type of person that she was, we supported her. You know, I didn't want her to do this at all, but I knew that she was thinking, well, she would get a jump start on her career and get a chance to travel, and she just had her plans all together. And the way they gave her the line that, you know, she would be well protected, and the possibility of her going away to Iraq was totally remote.
Is that right, Dr. Johnson? They told her that?
Yeah, they told her. When she came, she and I talked privately when I was trying to teach her how to drive, and we were on the way home, and she told me she had decided to go in the Army. I was opposed to it, but she seemed so, you know, determined. So I said, this is a bad time to go in the Army. I said, because, you know, they'll send you to Iraq. She said, my recruiter told me I wouldn't have to go to Iraq. And so I told her, I said, well, you know, that GI is called government issue, and once they sign you up, they can send you anywhere they want to. So when the recruiters
came
over here talking to us, I asked them, I said, well, what about her chances of going to Iraq? And the recruiter said, by her being a female, we doubt it very seriously.
That's what they told you, Miss Johnson?
Yes. Yes, Liz.
They said it to your face?
Yes. Yes.
Did you believe them when they said that?
No. I didn't. Lavina was kind of convinced, and she really didn't understand she was headed to Iraq until they told her she was going to Fort Campbell, Kentucky. At that point, she knew where her destiny was, and it was Iraq.
And how did you all get the news that your baby was going to be headed to Iraq? Did she call and tell you?
Yes, she did.
And what did she say?
She said, originally when she got to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, the unit that she was assigned to had already been deployed. And so they told her originally that she wouldn't have to go. So she called us up and told us, don't look like I'm going to be going to Iraq this round. She said, my unit's already over there. And a couple of days after that, she calls her mom, and she's talking to her mother, and she says, Mom, I'm going to Iraq.
Mrs. Johnson, what did you do when you heard those words coming out of your daughter's mouth, I'm going to Iraq?
I was devastated, and I told my husband, I just didn't know what to do, and I cried, and I prayed, and I was thinking and hoping something would happen that might change, but it didn't. And she was able to come home, and it was for a short while, I think a week or so, John.
4 days.
And then she was gone.
How long between the moment that she signed up to go to the Army, between that time and the time that she was told you're headed to Iraq, how much time was that?
Less than 10 months. She had been in the Army a little over, I think, right at 9 months.
When you talked to her, when you saw her before she went to Iraq, how was she with it? Was she scared? Was she surprised? What was her response?
She was terrified. But she was prayerful about it, and she was the type of person. She was very disciplined. The Army had already told us how disciplined she was when she came out of basic training. And so her whole point to us was, look, you know, I'm going to be okay. You know, I'm going to be working in an office, so I won't be in combat.
Is that what they told her?
Yeah.
Well, and she did. She worked in the communications room where soldiers come to email and call their loved ones, as she worked in that particular facility. And so she had access to a phone, so she called us and talked to both of us or her mom just about every day.
So what city was this in Iraq?
Ablan.
So she gets over to Iraq. She's in this facility. When she talked to you every day, did she talk about what it was like and what the people were like, the soldiers were like, that were around her? Did she talk to you about that?
Not a lot. She spent a lot of her time trying to convince us that she was safe. She said, look, I'm not fighting in combat. I'm away from combat. She said, so I'm safe. Lavina worried more about her combat pay than she did anything else. That was the impression that we had.
What does that mean, her combat
pay? Well, she was sent to a combat zone, so, you know, they get combat pay. They get extra pay. And Lavina's whole concept for going into the military was to get as much money as she could because she had some goals in her life that she wanted to accomplish. So combat pay, she called me, and 'cause I was keeping up with her pay. How much combat pay did I get this month? So we were giving her a total of how much money she was accumulating, and she was doing quite well. She had accumulated quite a bit of money.
What were her goals? What was she saving this money for?
First of all, I had her money to go to school when we first talked, but we had a piece of paper from the Army where she had gone in for counseling, and she wanted to learn how to drive. So my guess was she was planning on using the money I had for her to go to college, and I believe she's going to hit me up for a car. But she wanted to be a movie producer. In fact, she was kind of training herself before she even went into the Army. If you sit and watch the movie with her and they had trailers or something like that on the end of it, she would sit and watch them and take notes and stuff like that. So she was very serious about what it was she wanted to do.
And Mrs. Johnson, when you would talk to your daughter on the phone from Iraq, what were some of the things that you would say to her?
Most of the time we would always talk about family. She always wanted to know what her brothers, I have three sons, and her baby sister. And that would take a while because I had to tell her everything that everybody was doing. And we talked mostly about family and a lot about her goals. And the last conversation, I talked with my daughter on the 17th of July. And it was her break time. And she was happy. She was upbeat. And she always would keep me laughing. And she was... and we were talking about her coming home for Christmas. And we were making plans for the family because that was her favorite time of year. And we always... She and her dad... And her sister, Lakeisha, would always decorate the entire home. It was the project that they did. And that was our last conversation. And she told me she may be changing jobs. And on the 18th would have been that Monday. She said, I may not get a chance to call you on Monday. But I wasn't alarmed about that because, you know, some days she couldn't call because of classes and things like that, but she had already told me she never had to go off base because everything that she needed to do was right there. So she was always, like John was saying, trying to convince me that everything was okay. The main people that she was around were the military, the American people, but she did tell me there were Iraqi people working in the PX and things like that. But she just convinced me that everything was okay. But I would still tell her, you know, always watch your surroundings and, you know, the things that a mother would tell their daughter. And she didn't have a battle buddy, so that was a concern.
And what is a battle buddy?
A person that would be with her at all times because she wasn't supposed to be going different places alone. And I don't understand why she didn't have a battle buddy.
So, Dr. Johnson, how did you get the word about, when we come back, I want to talk to you about how you got the word about what happened to Lavina. I'm talking to Dr. John Johnson and Mrs. Linda Johnson. They are the parents of Private Lavina Johnson. Lavina Johnson was killed in Iraq, and there are a lot of questions about how this young woman died. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Good morning, St. Louis. 29 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at the traffic and weather. Southbound 270 between Doherty Ferry and Manchester. Look for an accident. Three lanes are blocked. Two left lanes, north and southbound, actually. Eastbound 70 between St. Charles Rock Road and Lindbergh. Look for an accident at Lindbergh. Vehicles off the roadway. Southbound 270 at Dorset and Olive. Look for an accident. Two left lanes are blocked. That's at Olive, so expect stop and go traffic. The lower east and westbound at 55 is closed due to overpass failure. I-55 is still open, but you can use Itasca or Wall Street to get around the lower overpass. Westbound 40 between 170 and McKnight. Look for water main break at that McKnight and 40. That Brentwood westbound McKnight is closed. You can use the Brentwood exit as an alternate. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well into the landing. Westbound Poplar Street Bridge traffic is moving from midspan on in. Northbound 270 at 70. Look for some delays as well as northbound 270 at 44. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. For today, windy, partly cloudy in the morning and early afternoon, becoming mostly cloudy, high in the upper 40s this evening, blustery, mostly cloudy, low in the upper 20s. Saturday, colder, mostly cloudy, chance of flurries, with a high in the upper 30s. Saturday evening, mostly cloudy once again, becoming partly cloudy overnight, low in lower 20s. And then on Sunday, mostly sunny, but a high only in the mid-40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 38 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 38 as well. The wind chill makes it feel like it's 31. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
What America needs is affordable health insurance. Finding affordable health insurance for you and your family, it's on everyone's mind right now. If you're self-employed, it's on your mind too. One of the things we face as entrepreneurial Americans is finding affordable health insurance. Well, I found a company you can call right now and get affordable health insurance. Midwest National Life Insurance Company of Tennessee. Write this number down. 877-652-7793. That's 877-652-7793. Midwest specializes in helping entrepreneurs of all kinds. Those of us who run small businesses or don't get health insurance where we work, to protect our families with affordable health insurance. Call 877-652-7793. Not available in all states. Association membership is required in most states. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Exclusions and limitations apply.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, here on AM 920 WGNU.
The Struggle for Fairness, on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Father, stop. Criticize your son. Mother, please leave your daughters alone. Don't you see that's what's wrong with the world? With the world today, oh. Everybody wants somebody to be their own piece of clay. Oh, everybody wants somebody to be their own.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. This hour I'm having a conversation with the parents of Lavina Johnson, Dr. John Johnson and Mrs. Linda Johnson. Private Lavina Johnson was killed in Iraq, and we're talking about, we're trying to get to the bottom of why she died. And Dr. Johnson, I'd like to take you to what I can't even imagine the moment was of how you found out that your daughter had died.
My wife and I were lying in bed, and this was the morning of the 19th of July of 2005. Our doorbell rang, and I jumped up and I turned to Linda and I said, I wonder who's ringing our doorbell at 7:30 in the morning. So Linda looked out the window and she said, John, there's a soldier on the porch.
Oh, Jesus.
And I said, you're kidding me. She says, no. She said, what does that mean? I said, oh, God, something that happened to Lavina. So when I went down the stairs, I opened the door. There's a staff sergeant standing there from Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And he said, Mr. John Johnson? And I said, yes. He said, is Miss Johnson here? And Linda was standing up on the porch, and he saw her. He said, I'm here to bring you a message from the Secretary of Defense. Your daughter, Lavina L. Johnson, died this morning of self-inflicted wounds. So I was devastated. Linda was devastated. Then the kids heard us. They all came out of their rooms, and the whole family just bawled. And he stood on the porch watching us all this time. Then I went to Linda to try to comfort her, and then he walked in. And then it hit me what he said.
Because you hadn't heard the words. It hadn't registered self-inflicted.
No, it hadn't registered. Then it hit me, and so I turned to him. I said, wait a minute. I said, did you say my daughter died of a self-inflicted wound? He said, yes. I said, you saying she committed suicide? So he put himself on defense. He said, no, sir, I didn't say that. He said, in fact, her death is being investigated. So he said, is there anything I can do? I said, you can't bring my daughter back. No, there's nothing you can do for me. So, you know, they go into this line, well, I'm so sorry at what happened to your daughter. And I said, look, I said, there's something going on here. I said, because I know for a fact if she wasn't messing around with any kind of dangerous weapons or anything like that, even though she was, because she was in the communications room, I said, there's something going on here. And so he stood there. So when he finally left, I mean, it took us, I mean, hours to even get anybody calm. And I called my sister-in-law, and then she got on the phone. And from that day on, our house was just full of family and relatives and friends. And my neighbors down the street, they saw all the cars parked by my house. And so I went out to get the mail, and they approached me, and they said, John, what's wrong? And I said, Lavina died in Iraq today. And everybody was devastated because the neighborhood knew her. They all liked her. And I tell you what, and it just overwhelmed us. And it was, and I think it caught us totally off guard again, because I had talked to her the morning of the 15th, and she had told me she was going to be rotating back to the States in the next 3 to 4 months. She would be in the States for a year. She would have to come back to Iraq to finish out her time. And then she said, but they don't have to worry about me reenlisting. She said, because they lied to me, got me over here in Iraq. The temperature over here is 120 degrees in the shade. And she laughed. And she said, the scorpions over here, Daddy, look like mice. And she was joking about it, you know. And so she was making plans on getting her. And I know that attitude because I had that attitude when I was in the military. When I got to the point where I'd had enough and I wanted to get out, I started counting the days and stuff like that. And I said, well, I'm getting out of here. Don't have to worry about me reenlisting. So she echoed my sentiment exactly when I had gotten to a point where my time was getting a little short and I had made my plans not to stay in.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, how did you process the phrase self-inflicted wound? What did you think when you heard that?
The first thing I thought that, like you say, she was doing something with a weapon, and it was a terrible accident. But
this is you thinking this through.
Yes. I was just almost out of my mind because I had just talked to my baby, and I knew everything was fine. We laughed, and we never... In any conversation I had with her, we never would say goodbye. We would always end it back and forth. I love you. I love you. I love you. And we would be laughing until one of us would have sense enough to hang up the phone. So I knew my baby wouldn't do that to herself. Never. Never.
So, Dr. Johnson, at what point did you begin talking to the military about this?
The officials called me after I buried her. I buried her on the 20th, I believe. And then they called me on the phone. This was the medical examiner from Dover Air Force Base. And so he started off our conversation very peculiar. He said, do you have any questions? So See, I worked for the Department of the Army for 25 years, plus I'm ex-GI, and I know how they operate. And so I said, my daughter had a bullet hole on the left side of her head, and I want to know how it got there.
Well, you examined the body then when the body came home.
Yes. In fact, the night that it was at the mortuary, I was looking her body over, and one of the people from the mortuary kind of moved her hair back, and I could see what looked to be a hole in her head.
Did they move the hair back to show you?
Yes, they did.
Why? Why did they want to show you that?
Because I have no idea. Just I guess maybe they felt something. It's hard to say, but I could see it.
Did you tell your wife that?
No, I didn't. No.
I was looking at my baby too, but she was fully dressed in her military attire, and her gloves were glued to her hands.
Correct.
And we understand later that that was unusual, that was out of the ordinary.
They glued her gloves to her hands.
Correct.
Who dressed her? Who put her in the outfit?
She came here like that.
She came here dressed.
Now, was that unusual?
Yes, because the mortuary usually, and we were told the body was extremely clean, kind of unusual. And usually they get a chance to dress these people when they come back. But she was fully dressed. She had her gloves glued on, and we couldn't get her gloves off, and we thought that was strange. But when the medical examiner talked to me, this is what he said to me. He said, she stuck an M16 rifle in her. You know, he said, what you saw was an exit wound.
Oh, because you asked him about the hole that you saw in your baby's head.
Correct. And I said, an exit wound? He said, yes. I said, from what? He said, she stuck an M16 rifle in her mouth and pulled the trigger. I said, that's impossible. He said, sir, she did it. I said, that my daughter was 5'1", and that weapon is 40 inches long. You tell me how she managed to do that. He said, well, she did, and the bullet came out of the back of her head. I said, no, sir, it did not. I saw it. It was on the left side of her head. He said, no, sir, it came out the back of her head. So I saw it right there. I said, you know what? These people are playing a game with me. So I said, let me ask you a question. Did you check to see if my daughter had been raped? And he said, no,
I
didn't.
Why did you ask that, Dr. Johnson?
Because I'm thinking, okay, if you're saying she committed suicide, there has to be a reason for it. And I'm trying to figure out what could that possibly be. And so that just came to me. And he said, no. And I said, you call me and tell me my daughter committed suicide under distress, and you didn't check to see if she had been raped. It seems to me that would have been the first thing you would have checked. He said there was no sign of a struggle, so I didn't need to. That's exactly how. And then he said, and by the way, we couldn't find the bullet. I said, you couldn't find the bullet? He said, no. I said, why not? She lived in a barracks. He said, well, we couldn't find the bullet. And I said, man, you know what? I said, we got a problem. And so I hung up.
So had you, did you then tell your wife this?
When she calmed down a little bit, I kind of fed her a little bit at a time. And so I told her then, I said, you know what? Somebody done murdered Lavina, and those knuckleheads, I ain't going to say what I said, are covering it up. I said, but I'm going to tell you something right now. They done picked the wrong person. That was pretty much it.
So what was the next thing that you did? You talked to this medical examiner. Now, was that unusual for him to call you?
No. He had to call me.
Why is that?
In fact, the casualty NCO from Fort Leonard Wood to help us with funeral arrangements, et cetera, he was kind of still hanging around us. And he was supposed to have set it up that we communicated right away. Well, they were supposed to have called me before I buried her, but they didn't. They waited until after I buried her and then called me.
Did you ever have any second thoughts about burying her, thinking I might be getting rid of evidence here? Did that thought ever cross your mind?
Yes, it did. I thought about it. In fact, I asked some people, pretty much in authority, about doing an autopsy, and if they knew someone, They pretty much told me, well, John, the only thing about it is usually they're inconclusive. And he said, and, you know, they got to tear that body up pretty good. So, you know, you might want to think about that. And my wife was already devastated.
Okay, we're going to continue our conversation after this break. I'm talking to Dr. John Johnson, Mrs. Linda Johnson, parents of Private Lavina Johnson. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with me. Know the place to shop for all your appliance needs? Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Last year, Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones were the leaders of not one fraudulent failed recall attempt in the 22nd Ward, but two. They paid workers in excess of $3,000 to get names on a petition by any means necessary. Can you believe it? More than eight dead people's names were on those petitions. That's right, dead people. This disgusting act perpetrated the biggest voter fraud in the city of St. Louis, and it's still under investigation today. What were they thinking? Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones served the 22nd Ward for over 20 years. On their watch, major department stores like Woolworth and others along Martin Luther King Drive have left. Not only did the stores abandon our neighborhoods, so did Ozier and Jones. They had a bad habit of not returning phone calls, few community meetings, and no real concern for the residents. With this type of behavior, why should we believe anything that Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones say? On March 6th, let's say no to Ozier. Stick with Boyd. Going backwards should not be an option.
Paid for by Citizens to Elect Jeffrey L. Boyd, Patrice A. Johnson, Boyd Treasurer.
Hey, St. Louis, this is Sir Sax inviting you to a show called the Gospel Skate Party every Friday night at 10 p.m. It's a program in which I bring you the best in Christian rap, righteous R&G, a taste of that holy hip-hop, etc., etc. It's heard right here on WGNU 920 on your AM dial. Don't forget, the Gospel Skate Party every Friday at 10 p.m. Get your skates on and skate with Sir Sax.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Bryant.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. My name is Liz Brown. I am talking to Dr. John Johnson and Mrs. Linda Johnson, parents of Private Lavina Johnson. So, Dr. Johnson, you buried your child under all these suspicions, the hole in the head, the gloves glued to the hand, the body dress, the body, very, very clean. What happened after you hung up the phone from the medical examiner and that even raised your suspicions even more about what happened to your daughter? Who did you contact next?
Actually, what I did, I got in contact with an attorney because that's how you get more information out of the military, at least I thought. Of course, obviously, I went to the news media because I knew for a fact that things were getting a little suspicious, and in addition to that, our casualty NCO wanted, he asked us if we wanted to bury Lavina in Arlington National Cemetery. And I said, Arlington National Cemetery? And I thought that was strange for a suicide. Then he said, we can fly you and your wife up there. I said, no, I'm going to bury my wife in Jefferson Barracks. And I did that because I know I have a right to exhume that body if I wanted to.
Because Arlington would be a whole nother story.
That's correct. It would be, we're having enough problems getting her out of Jefferson Barracks, and to get her out of Arlington would have been almost impossible. So at any rate, that I made that decision, and of course, the other thing that was peculiar was they promoted my daughter after she was dead.
And after she had committed suicide.
Yeah, and after she had committed so-called suicide. So it just all, and I just kind of made up my mind, you know, this is going to be a fight, but I am not going to let them get away with, first of all, they endangered my daughter's life by allowing her to run around Iraq doing her job without a battle buddy. And she had a battle buddy in basic training, battle buddy in advanced infantry training, and she had a battle buddy at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And a battle buddy is the person that's with you 24 hours a day so that there's accountability for everything that you do during that day. So you kind of look out for one another.
So what have you learned since your daughter was buried? Were you able to exhume her body?
At that point, I was waiting to get something from them because their word didn't mean anything to me anyway. So after 10 months, I had a criminal investigator to call me, and this is how his conversation went with me, because they obviously knew that this was a news item. So he goes, we're going to be preparing a news release on your daughter. We've completed our investigation. Incidentally, we concluded your daughter committed suicide. And so I said, wait a minute. You,
a criminal.
Yeah, and it was a criminal. Oh, and let me mention one more thing. The NCO that escorted Lavina's body from Iraq back to Missouri, when he got here and he heard that she had died of a self-inflicted wound, he told our casualty NCO that that wasn't true. He said they don't know what happened to her. Her death is under a criminal investigation. So the Army retaliated by saying, well, all combat deaths are criminally investigated. But the criminal investigator who talked to us when this investigation first started told me that wasn't true. He said Fort Campbell, Kentucky requested this investigation. So after 10 months, here they're coming back to me saying they concluded that it was a suicide. And so I said, wait a minute. You telling me it took you 10 months to conclude that this death was a suicide? He said, yes, sir. So I told him, I said, you know this isn't over, don't you? He said, what do you mean? I said, because that's what I expected you to do. I said, because you people do not have any integrity. You started off saying this is a suicide, and I know you'll go through hell and high water before you admit you were wrong. I said, but I'm going to tell you something. This fight is not over. I'm taking it to the next level. He said, well, what do you have? Well, I kind of bluffed in a way. I did have some information, but I didn't have a lot, and I didn't have anything from them other than their word. And I said, trust me, I've given some information to my attorney, which was the truth. And I said, and you in for one hell of a fight. He said, well, sir, if there's anything we can do to help you, please contact us.
So were you able to exhume her body?
No. After we got, it took us almost a year to get information from the medical examiner. And the pictures that we got, they weren't really pictures. They were copies, black and white copies of pictures, and they'd been dusted. So you couldn't see, the figures, the blood, et cetera. But you could look and tell that the scene where her body was found was just riddled with blood all over the place. I was devastated when I first looked in that package because I was told there was no sign of a struggle. And the first thing that I see is my daughter's face all messed up. So I closed it up and I finally composed myself. And then I called my brother, Joseph Johnson. And the reason I called Joseph is because he has a degree in police science and he also has a background in criminal justice. So I got him on the phone and I said, Joe, I'm looking through these pictures, man. I said, Lavina was beat all the hell, man. He said, you're kidding me. I said, I'm looking at this picture, man. You ought to see this, man. So he said, bring them to me. So I took them over to him, and he went through the package. And then while we were going through it, we could tell, even from pictures, the copies of the pictures that they gave us, what happened to her. And we put that package together. We sent it to the Army and said, hey, you guys said this was a suicide. You lied. This was a homicide, and here's the evidence. Then they came back with more innuendos about my daughter. And at that point, I sat down and I said, you know what? We're going to have to exhume that body. So I ordered the papers from Jefferson Barracks. My wife and I went and had them notarized. I gave them to my attorney. He gave them to Veterans Administration. That's what he told me, and that's who was responsible at Jefferson Barracks, Veterans Administration. He told me that they said 60 to 90 days. Well, when I called Jefferson Barracks to find out what was going on with getting that body exhumed, they told me they hadn't received the papers. So when I went back to my attorney, he said they should have. I sent them to him. So what my wife and I have done, because we think the Army is putting a delay on it, so what we did, we went and had a second set of papers notarized, and yesterday I mailed them registered mail, so somebody have to sign to get them, because our intent is to get that body out, and my attorney has a pathologist that's going to do an individual autopsy for us, and we also have a person from one of the news stations that said they got somebody that want to do it for us. And so we're going to get it done one way or the other.
And why can't you just go down there and just take somebody and go exhume your daughter's body?
Because you have to file the paperwork, and they claim they didn't receive the paperwork the first time.
Are you at all concerned about the amount of time that's passing? Are you concerned about the loss of evidence for every day that goes by?
First of all, I sealed her in a vault, and that's sealed fairly tight. But things like finding out what happened to her, why she died, how she got murdered, stuff like that, that body can be in there years, and you can still tell that. Now, as far as, you know, salvaging DNA and stuff like that, we still may be able to do that. The technology is pretty sophisticated, and we were told that body can still tell us a lot about what happened. So I'm confident that if we get it out of that ground, we're going to get some answers.
Mrs. Johnson, are you mad?
Yes, I am. I'm very, very mad.
Who are you angry at?
The people who were responsible for her, who were supposed to be protecting her, and seem like they're the ones that did the damage. My daughter was murdered. My husband, he didn't allow me to see some things. But how can you shoot yourself and set your body on fire?
What do you mean, set your body on fire?
It was a fire. John hadn't got to that point.
There was a fire as well, Dr. Johnson?
Yes. A person was coming to work, these are statements that were in the criminal investigative packages, because we got two, one from the criminal investigators and the other one from the pathologist. The first respondent said he heard what sounded like a shot. He said, or backfire. He said when he looked towards the tent where it came from, he could see a fire. He said he ran to the tent and looked in, and there was someone in there lying on her back. He went and got a second person, and the two of them rushed in the tent. Well, they claimed that this is the Army now, that Lavina sat on a 18-inch bench, stuck the rifle in the mouth, and pulled the trigger. Well, this bench that was in the pictures was the bench that was lying on top of her, and there was an exhalant sitting inside of it, and it was an aerosol can that had been set on fire. They removed the bench from her and took it outside. And then there was a second fire that was in the tent, so they went and put it out.
Well, how could she have set a fire if she had shot herself?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And John also told me that they said they pulled my baby from the fire, and she was smoking.
Okay, well, they didn't. They tried to. They said they tried to. The criminal investigator, see, there's a blood smudge that's several feet from where her body was found, and then there are blood drops leading from that spot to where she was lying. So the criminal investigator asked both of the respondents, he said, did you move her body? And they said, well, we tried, but she was too heavy. So that tells me, Lavina weighed about 110 pounds probably, that tells me that rigor mortis had set in and she'd been dead for a number of hours.
Dr. Johnson, Mrs. Johnson, I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning. And would you please continue to have a conversation with me as we as you get closer to getting to the bottom of what happened to your daughter?
Absolutely.
Thank you again. And I am so sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you. She was such a sweetheart, and she deserved, and she was such a patriot. You know, that's what's so ironic about this whole thing. I worked for the Department of Army for 25 years. She gets murdered, and they turned on both of us.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you, Mrs. Johnson.
You live.
Listen, folks, I'll be back with Wellness 101. Stay with me.
Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. A bus accident in Atlanta has left at least six people dead. The vehicle rolled off of a highway ramp and onto I-75. This man works nearby.
I heard about 10 people hurt, a lot of people hurt on the bus. There's a lot of ambulance, a lot of policemen out there.
The accident caused major backups, which may be around for a while. Officer Joe Cobb with the Atlanta Police Department.
We're trying to get organized and coordinated at the scene and care for the injured that remain here.
The charter bus is believed to have been carrying members of the baseball team from Ohio's Bluffton University. The rains were just part of a line of severe weather, also blamed for deadly tornadoes. One of them slammed onto a high school, in Enterprise, Alabama, killing at least eight students. Don Hartley with the state's Emergency Management Department was asked why the kids weren't sent home before the storm.
You worry as to, well, if you dismiss the school, will you put the children on the buses and end up having them in harm's way on the streets, which is an even worse place? In most cases, the students being in the school, generally it's a safer place.
At least 20 people were killed in the twisters from the Midwest to the Gulf Coast.
Throughout the night, the same powerful line of storms moved on, sweeping through Georgia. Power was knocked out across the state, and authorities have already confirmed 9 deaths in Baker, Sumter, and Taylor counties.
That's ABC's Sam Champion in Enterprise, Alabama. She lived her life over the top, and Anna Nicole Smith's funeral today will be no different.
Anna Nicole moved here last summer, and increasingly there's been more attention on this island. Her 20-year-old son died down here. Her baby, a daughter, was born here. And then, of course, now her funeral is planned for here. So I think it's something that, unfortunately, they've had to get used to, this kind of attention and traffic.
ABC's Deborah Robertson, Nassau, Bahamas. ABC News Money Scope. The Dow is down 39 points, NASDAQ off 11. This is ABC News. Hello?
Awful night.
Yeah?
My erosive acid reflux.
Haven't you heard of Protonix Pantoprazole Sodium?
What?
Protonix. One daily tablet helped control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms too?
Yeah, even helped repair acid reflux damage. Plus, I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan.
Right. Gotta go.
Where?
To see my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonixSavings.com or call 866-794-ACID to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you. Police in Salt Lake City, Utah, have released the 911 tapes from last month's deadly mall shooting. More from ABC News national correspondent Jim Hickey.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, elite 5 down.
The 911 calls poured into Salt Lake City Police Headquarters.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Some of the callers were trapped inside the mall.
Somebody's shooting up here at Sully Square.
Others were in their cars outside.
The kid came running up to our car, and he was covered in blood, and there were shots being fired.
One caller said her husband was an off-duty cop.
He does have his gun, and he's out there somewhere. somewhere.
And then...
More shots fired.
That off-duty cop, Ken Hammond, was later called a hero for his efforts trying to prevent further bloodshed.
There are people running everywhere.
Jim Hickey, ABC News.
IVF is the only way that some women can conceive, but the process can be tough on the body. Now researchers in the Netherlands say a more mild form of the fertility treatment, which uses less hormone stimulation, is just as effective. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Friday, lawmakers are proposing an improvement plan for the St. Louis City Schools. The proposal was made by State Senator Jeff Smith and State Representative T.D. Alamine. The proposal includes adding 90 minutes to each school day and 6 weeks to each school year. Early estimates show that the reform package would cost from $20 to $30 million a year. Smith and Alamine say that the proposals would rely on private donations as well as state money. A former school district worker has pleaded guilty in a child pornography case. 44-year-old Thomas Mantilla Barnhart was a computer network specialist for the Melville School District. He faces 5 to 20 years in federal prison when he receives his sentence in May. Mantle was arrested last year and accused of using a school computer to send pornographic pictures of minors. Mantle worked in the computer lab for the district, but officials say he did not have regular contact with students and was fired after the investigation began. Finally this hour, the Blues got a power play goal from Lee Stempniak in overtime last night to defeat the Islanders 3-2 in New York. The Islanders had a 2-0 lead with less than 3 minutes left in regulation when Jay McClement and Peter Kajanek lit the lamp to force overtime. Curtis Sanford stopped 25 shots on the defensive end for the Note, who have won 6 of their last 7 games. The Blues return to the ice tomorrow afternoon against another New York team, the Rangers. The puck drops at noon. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Southbound 270 between St. Charles Rock Road and Olive. Look for an accident. Two lanes are blocked. It's at Olive. Two left lanes are blocked. Expect stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 40 between Laclede Station and 170. Look for slow traffic. The left lane is blocked. There's an accident there. It's just east of 170. Delore in both directions, east and westbound at 55 is closed due to overpass failure. 55 is open, but you can use Itasca or Wall Street as a bypass to get around the Delore 55 overpass intersection. Northbound 270 between Gravois and Manchester, look for an accident. It's cleared. That's due to an earlier southbound accident, and you can still expect some residual delays. Southbound 270 between 40 and Manchester, that accident's cleared. That's just north of Manchester. So expect some slowdowns there. Westbound 40 between 170 and McKnight. Look for a water main break at McKnight and Highway 40. The ramp from westbound 40 to McKnight is closed. You can exit at Brentwood if you need to get off there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic's moving well into the landing. Westbound Poplar Street Bridge is moving well into downtown. Eastbound 40 between Boone Bridge and Clarkson Valley, look for no delays. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road through K, look for no problems to report. Northbound 270 at 70, you can expect no delays in the 70 exit lanes. That is a look at this hour's traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Sunday. For today, look forward to windy, partly cloudy in the morning, mostly cloudy by the afternoon with a high. In the upper 40s this evening, blustery, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 20s. Saturday, colder, mostly cloudy, chance of flurries, high in the upper 30s. Saturday evening, mostly cloudy in the evening, partly cloudy overnight with a low in the lower 20s. Then on Sunday, mostly sunny skies, high in the mid 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 39 degrees, Lambert Fields reporting 40, wind chill makes it feel like it's freezing, 32. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU. Stick around. It's Wellness 101. That's up next.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you stand?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal
freedom. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to Wellness 101 with Dr. Rosa Kincaid. My name is Liz Brown. This is our Friday journey that we take into the Friday class that we engage in every Friday at 9 o'clock, Wellness 101 with Dr. Rosa Kincaid. And Dr. Kincaid, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing just great.
Very good. This morning, this hour, this time, we are going to have a conversation about fluoride. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Fluoride is something that I was always taught was good for your teeth. It's in the toothpaste, it's in the water, sometimes we go and we get it coated on our teeth at the dentist's office, but I think...
And we're encouraged to, whenever you buy toothpaste, make sure that you get toothpaste with fluoride in it.
That's right. I have found out, I always knew that there was something about the toothpaste because on the back there's a poison warning. If you read the back, it says if you accidentally swallow, call poison control. But actually, it's a lot more extensive than I thought.
And I just kind of want to just stay over this piece about the poison warning. Is there anything, doctor, that you can think of that we have in our culture, in a FDA-approved product that says ingest, but it is poison? You know, don't swallow, but it's poison. I mean, is there something in our daily lives like that that has been FDA approved that says, oh, by the way, it is poison, so don't swallow this?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm thinking about cigarettes. There is a warning on cigarettes, but whether that's FDA approved or mm-hmm. not, it probably is. You can't get arrested smoking mm-hmm. a cigarette. But I can't offhand think of something that's supposed to improve the health of your teeth and make them look
or your
healthy.
Body. Your body.
That's right.
You know, that you're putting in that is poison. We're gonna continue this conversation because we have a guest joining us from Toronto, Alice Terpstra.
Yes.
RN and a nutritionist. She's gonna talk to us about what is this fluoride poisoning? We're gonna talk about that when we come back with Wellness 101. Stay with us, folks.
This is Alderman Jeffrey Boyd, and I'm asking for your vote on March 6th to re-elect me as your alderman for the 22nd Ward. Together, we've leveraged over $850,000 in home repair dollars for senior citizens and the disabled. We have the highest attendance at monthly ward meetings across the city every month. We've torn down over 116 dangerous buildings that were neglected for as long as 15 years. We've paved over 47 alleys and streets. 4 years ago, Jones and Ozer said no one will pay $100,000 to move into our neighborhoods. But we've proved them wrong. New homeowners have paid as much as $129,000 for their new home. Together, we're making a difference. And we're making our neighborhoods stronger. Let's continue what we've started. Vote for me, Jeffrey Boyd, on Tuesday, March 6th.
Paid for by citizens to elect Jeffrey L. Boyd, Patrice A. Johnson Boyd, Treasurer.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers. And we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Hey, girl, you made it just in time. Pastor's getting ready to storm.
Girl, I really needed to be here this Sunday.
What happened?
You didn't hear?
Uh-uh.
Well, last week, Jennifer Florida, you know, the older woman?
Mm-hmm.
Her son went into the hospital for brain surgery.
Oh, my God. How old is he?
12 or 13. That's not the worst part. Girl, the worst part is that a bunch of aldermen went up to Jim Shrewsbury, and they asked him to say a special prayer for the child. Because, you know, they always start their meetings with a prayer.
That's right. They asked a special prayer, too.
Yeah, well, not last week. Because that Jim Shrewsbury said no.
What? He said no to a child having brain surgery?
Girl, that's right. And they said it's just because Jennifer Florida and her ward endorsed Lewis Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen.
Lord, I'm going to have to pray for Jim Shrewsbury.
Well, I'm going to pray for him, too. But I'm certainly not going to vote for him.
Amen to that.
Paid for by the 6th Ward Progressive Democrats, Paul Shannon, Treasurer.
The award-winning wake-up call. Analyzing the story, shaping your world.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Wellness 101. My name is Liz Brown, and I'm here as I am every Friday at 9 a.m. with Dr. Rosa Kincaid, M.D., and we're going to be talking this morning about fluoride, but there was an announcement that there wanted, you wanted something you wanted to say.
Yes, I would just like to give a get well wish, and I want everyone to pray for one of my patients, Evelyn Chauvin. She's very sick in the hospital.
Bless your heart.
And I just want to send out all loving thoughts and get well thoughts to her.
Very good. Me too.
Mother Chauvin.
Me too. Yeah. Right. I co-sign on that. So let's get to our guest this morning, Alice Terpstra. She's an RNCP, a nutritionist, joining us from Toronto, and we're talking about fluoride poisoning. Alice, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
And I'm here, of course, with Dr. Kincaid.
Good morning, Alice.
Hello, Rosa.
I guess maybe we should start with a definition of fluoride poisoning. Does that make sense? That was the place to start.
I think so. Well, we define it as the symptoms that you get when you're exposed to fluoride from any source and that go away when you take the fluoride away.
Now, is it considered like a toxin? Is it that type of a entity?
Well, there's two kinds of fluoride poisoning. If you swallow toothpaste, you'll get immediately sick, and that we would call acute poisoning. But the kind of poisoning that our organization is talking about is the chronic, silent, accumulative poisoning that you get from the small doses that are all around you in your food, water, and air.
So talk to us about that, this ongoing poisoning that we're exposed to.
Well, fluoride in a small dose now and again is pretty harmless. It's when you get a small dose in everything and it builds up and it overwhelms your ability to cope with it, and then you get symptoms. Because fluoride is inherently a toxin that blocks some necessary nutrients that you need to function.
What is fluoride?
Well, fluoride is an element in the periodic table. It's a naturally occurring chemical that is almost always bound to another mineral. So in the earth, it's safely stored away. And when you dig it out of the earth and burn it and combine it with other things, then it becomes a problem. So in modern industrial life, fluoride has become a real problem because it's in everything. It's a pollutant in the air, it's a pollutant in the water, and then now we have it added deliberately to the water as a public health policy.
Well, can we take a little history trip and go back and start at the beginning? Certainly there was a point when fluoride wasn't in our water and didn't have that kind of access to us. Give us the history of that.
Well, I would say back in the 1930s, there was more of a problem with getting fluoride out of well water, particularly in areas like Colorado and Texas, where they had people developing really bad teeth as a result of too much fluoride, and they had bone problems, too. And then, because America was entering the industrial age, where there was a lot of steel and aluminum being produced, and they were entering the Green Revolution with chemical fertilizers, that required phosphate rock to be processed with natural gas into chemical fertilizers that could boost the yield. They had a problem with too much fluoride as a pollutant as a result of these industries. And basically, a bunch of lawyers and CEOs from these polluting companies got together and took over U.S. Public Health Service and said, I know, we'll solve the problem by putting it in the drinking water and saying that it's a
Do people make money off of this? Is there like a fluoride store out there that makes money off of this kind of fluoride being in the water and in other places?
I don't know that it's that profitable, but it certainly is convenient for the companies that have a problem with fluoride waste.
How so?
Well, it's a toxin that you can't. The EPA won't allow you to put it into the air or the water or the soil, so they have to have it in these big holding ponds and tanks and so forth. And if they can bottle that up and sell it to public health departments across the country, then they can recoup some of their rubber costs of getting it out of the product that it shouldn't be in.
So somewhere along the way, there is somebody dumping fluoride into the water that we're drinking.
I wouldn't call it dumping. They very carefully pump it in a little bit at a time, and they have to monitor the amount that's put in the water. But it's still 5 to 20 times more than is naturally occurring in most waters that Americans have access to.
Is the biggest source from processing of aluminum still?
I wouldn't say so. I think that there are so many multiple sources. Around the time that they were developing the atomic bomb, one of the largest sources of pollution of fluoride was the uranium enrichment process. And that was going on secretly in all kinds of different locations all over North America.
Well, what is the science out there that tells us that we need fluoride in our water, that we need fluoride in our toothpaste, that we need fluoride? Where does the science come from, and what does the science say?
The science says that it's not a nutrient. The dogma is what says it's a nutrient that we need. The science says it's a toxin. The dogma says that we should have it. The science says it's not good for developing babies or children. The dogma says that children need it to develop strong teeth. The science just isn't there to support water fluoridation. So water fluoridation isn't based on science. It's based on something else.
What are some of the symptoms, I guess?
Yes. What are the symptoms of fluoride toxicity?
Well, for most people, the symptoms of toxicity depend on dose, but for 1 to 4% of the population, the symptoms happen because you're hypersensitive.
Happen because you're hypersensitive?
That's right.
So what is
the dose that someone else can tolerate without developing a problem is a dose that makes you sick. It will suppress your thyroid, it'll give you aches and pains, really bad fibromyalgia, brain fog, chemical sensitivities, it'll upset your digestion, it'll harm your kidneys. Going pee all the time. No matter how much you drink, you can't get rid of the thirst. That is what fluoride poisoning illness is all about.
That sounds.
Go to your doctor, and they won't believe you because how can your tap water do stuff like that to you?
So what does a person say? I mean, those sound like symptoms that could be attributed to a lot of other things. You know, getting older, you know, having to get up and go to the bathroom all of the time. You know, you're tired, you're achy, you're getting older. That's what happens when you get older. What is a person to do?
The easiest thing to do is to try a 2-week trial of fluoride avoidance. You use a non-fluoride toothpaste, you eat just simple, plain, fresh foods for 2 weeks, and you drink distilled water and use distilled or reverse osmosis water for all of your cooking and drinking. And see how you feel.
So
for a lot of people, the relief is so dramatic that there is no question in their mind that fluoride is the problem in their health picture.
So you mentioned distilled water.
Yes.
Is that different than I have a bottle of natural spring water, Ice Mountain natural spring water in front of me? How do I know that this does not have fluoride in it, and why would I choose distilled water or should I choose a distilled water over this bottle of water that I had to crack the cap to get to? It must be pure. I have to crack the cap. So what do I look for? What do I choose?
Well, if it says the fluoride content on the label, you can estimate what your intake would be. Over the day of drinking that water.
It doesn't say that.
It doesn't say.
Then you have to do your detective work. That's why we recommend that if you suspect that fluoride is a problem for your health, you use distilled water because you know it's guaranteed not to have any fluoride in it.
Can you create your own distilled water?
Oh, yes. You can use a distiller in your kitchen, and you can spend a lot of money on reverse osmosis filtration or a home distiller unit. But for a 2-week trial, it's just much simpler to get a couple of those 5-gallon bottles and a hand pump and try that.
Now, does this, am I supposed to go as far as using distilled water to bathe in? Should I be?
No.
Because, well, the skin is an organ, too, and it absorbs it, too. So is there any science or measurement of the amount of water that my body takes in by sitting in a tub that has fluoride in it?
Well, it varies according to the permeability of your skin. And there are things that make your skin more permeable, like lotions that have aluminum in them.
Mm.
So aluminum will enhance the uptake of fluoride from the skin.
Mm.
And there's aluminum in antiperspirants.
There is. There's aluminum in lotions and soaps and shampoo and toothpaste.
I don't know if I have the strength to go on with this interview. We're going to take a break. We're talking about fluoride. This is Wellness 101, Dr. Roja Kincaid, and our guest, Alice Terpstra, RNCP, and nutritionist, joining us from Toronto, Canada. My name is Liz Brown. We'll be back.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community. ConnectCare is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of ConnectCare's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At ConnectCare, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At ConnectCare, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
I am a parent, and I live in the city of St. Louis. There is nothing that is more important to me than the education of children, and not just my children, but all children. Unfortunately, not all people feel the same. The state of Missouri is attempting to take over our public schools by eliminating our right to vote for the people that we want to run our school district. Well, you know what? The state is wrong. We live in the city of St. Louis where our children attend public schools, so we should decide who educates our children. Someone needs to stand up and fight for the protection of our children and our votes. That's why I'm going to vote Louis Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen. He is the only candidate in this race who has said no to a state takeover. We need someone who's fighting on our side. So on March 6th, I'm taking my children and I'm going to the polls and I'm voting Louis Reed for president of the Board of Aldermen.
Paid for by the committee to elect Louis Reed, Thomas Shepard, treasurer.
This is Judy Moskoff. Join me for A Gardener's Notebook every Monday at 12 noon on AM 920 WGNU. As a master gardener, I'll answer your questions about what grows and what doesn't, how to control annoying garden pests, and help you create colorful flower gardens and the freshest fruits and vegetables you've ever tasted. Join me, Judy Moskoff, for A Gardener's Notebook, Mondays at noon on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the gardening issues that matter most to you.
Be in the know as you're on the go with Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Wellness 101. I am talking this morning, of course, to Dr. Roja Kincaid, and we have a guest joining us from Toronto, Alice Terpstra, RNCP, and a nutritionist. And Dr. Kincaid, we're talking about fluoride, and you had some questions that you wanted to...
Yes, can you speak about where else do we find fluoride? You know, if we're eating organic foods and we're not eating canned foods, what are some of the other common sources of fluoride?
It is in a lot of processed foods because a lot of those foods are dehydrated and processed in fluoridated water. So the fluoride remains behind. And when you reconstitute them with your tap water, you're adding even more fluoride. So things like powdered milk. You add your tap water to make powdered milk liquid, and you've just lost fluoride intake. It's in cigarettes. So if you smoke, you're inhaling it through your own cigarettes, and everyone around you is getting it in secondhand smoke. Hypersensitive people will not be able to go into a bar, and they think that they're reacting to the smoke, but a lot of times they're actually reacting to the fluoride. In air pollution. Every time a power plant burns a bunch of coal to make electricity, they're releasing fluoride. So if you're downwind from any of those things, you're breathing in some of that daily intake, and it's going into your bones, thyroid, and your kidneys, and it's adding to the stuff that you're getting from your food and your water. It's in beer, very high in tea.
It's in beer? It's in tea?
What kind of tea? The organic
black,
teas?
Yes, orange pekoe, black tea, English breakfast, that kind of tea.
What about those organic teas that you get at the health food store?
They tend to be lower, and green tea is lower in fluoride because it uses the younger leaf.
This is making me think, okay, I've got to go buy organic food, but is fluoride something that they look for as well, and that they make as part of the process of bringing the food to us? I mean, do they check the soil for fluoride, or is it just pesticides?
Well, if there's too much fluoride left in the chemical fertilizer, the plants won't grow. So that's the whole reason why they scrub it. When they're processing the rock into fertilizer in Florida, those big phosphate fertilizer mines in Florida, they have to remove the naturally occurring fluoride from the phosphate rock, otherwise the fertilizer that they produce would be toxic to the plant.
Mm. It's also in some of the pills that are prescribed. It's in Cipro, it's in Prozac. And then what effect is the fluoride going to have on people who are taking these medications?
Well, that is a big black hole of no information, because the fluorides that are bonded to those organic molecules in drugs, we don't know that much about. We don't know how they linger in the body, or what cell receptors they bind to, or what endocrine disrupting effects they have.
Let me get to a caller or two here. Dee, you have a question for our guest?
Yes, the nurse. You know those pure filtration systems, the PUR, that you hook onto your faucet? Will that eliminate the fluoride?
Thanks for your question. Did you catch that?
Not a word.
Okay. The pure filtration systems that you attach to your faucet, will those take out the fluoride?
If they're just carbon filters, no, they will not. The only filter that will take fluoride out is a reverse osmosis membrane filter.
Reverse osmosis membrane filter.
That's the only kind that removes fluoride.
What does that look like? Does it look like something out of like Frankenstein's lab type of, because it sounds very complicated.
Well, they call them RO systems.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them under your sink.
Oh, okay.
You had mentioned, we spoke a lot, that there are certain groups that are more at risk for fluoride toxicity. Can you address that?
Well, the Centers for Disease Control has been monitoring not only fluoride in the teeth of children, in American children, for the last 40 years, but in overall health. And what they have found is that inner-city black children are at far greater risk of damage to their teeth and bones from fluoride than white children.
Why is that?
They don't know. Again, the science that should be done in North America, where fluoridation began, is not being done. And the rest of the world has rejected fluoridation. So there's no need for them to study fluoridation because they're not doing it.
Wait a minute. The rest of the world, Europe doesn't have fluoridated water?
China doesn't?
98% of Europe has rejected water fluoridation on the grounds of ethics and science.
Do they have fluoridated toothpaste?
Yes, they have fluoridated toothpaste.
But I guess what you're saying is that if you only have moderate exposure to it, it's not as problematic.
Fluoridated toothpaste is your choice. You can choose to buy a non-fluoridated toothpaste.
True
but
enough.
If you have water coming out of your tap that is your only source and it's essential for life, you're getting fluoride whether you want it or not.
Let me get to another caller or two. Christine, you have a question for our guest or
yes,
our doctor?
I'd like to ask your guest on this so-called RO system, is there any kind of portable unit we could put on our counters to get this fluoride out of our water, just as plain citizens? Thank you.
I think I heard that. She was asking if there's a portable countertop system that you can use.
Right.
I believe that there is a ceramic filter that reduces it but does not remove it.
Does boiling water take the fluoride out?
No, it concentrates.
Ah!
It releases the chlorine, which evaporates, which is why you can boil water to drive off the chlorine, but it concentrates the fluoride.
Alice, what effect does fluoride have on adolescent black girls?
Well, what the Centers for Disease Control found is that if you're a young black inner-city girl, you're more likely to have really early puberty, say age 9 or 10 when you get your first period. And you are more likely to be obese, and you are more likely to have nocne, and you're more likely to have damage to your teeth from fluoride that's visible.
How does that happen? How does the fluoride do that?
Well, we think that there are two things going on. Blacks are often lactose intolerant, which means that they don't absorb the calcium from milk. And number two, blacks need more vitamin D because with dark skin, you need more sunlight exposure to make the same amount of vitamin D as a white skin. And for the last 20 years, we've been told to stay out of the sun. So black children are growing up without adequate vitamin D, and vitamin D is essential to put minerals in bones.
But what about, I mean, how does that address the, you keep saying inner city as if location, so a child of African descent that lives in the suburbs is not as at risk as a child of African descent that's in the city. Is that what you're saying?
What the Centers for Disease Control data seemed to show that was that there were some socioeconomic risks that added to the fluoride.
So it's really not about geography as much as it is about economics.
Right. Inner city kids are also more exposed to lead, and lead and fluoride are synergistic toxins. Inner city kids are probably less likely to have good dental care, less likely to have nutritious meals with fresh fruit and vegetables than suburban kids.
So we're really talking about economics, because if there are children of African descent that live in suburban areas, and there are lots of poor people or lots of people that can't afford to buy fresh fruits and vegetables, it's about economics as opposed to something unique that occurs in a city.
That's right.
Okay.
It's economic and
So in terms of the way that you can determine whether or not you have this in your system, you gave the opportunity for people to do a self test in 2 weeks, take all the water out and use distilled water and see how you feel after that. Is there something that you can take to your doctor and say, doctor, do this test? And so because I'm concerned that I might have way too much fluoride in my world. I have all of these symptoms and I think it's connected to fluoride poisoning. Is there a test that you can direct your doctor to or something that you can ask your doctor to do to you to measure whether or not you should be concerned about the fluoride in your system?
Well, one of the largest groups of symptoms is concerned with the effect on the thyroid. So you can ask your doctor to run the thyroid-stimulating hormone test for hypothyroidism. because an awful lot of fluoride poisoned people have low thyroid, and that leads to a great many of their symptoms, including the irritable bowel that is so common in America today. If you have an elevated TSH count, there is a pretty good chance that fluoride is suppressing your thyroid. Now, we have a few case studies collected by our organization that clearly show that after about a year off fluoride, the thyroid comes back all on its own with no medication. And that certainly was my case. It took me 2 years because I was very badly poisoned. But in 2 years, I was able to get off all of my thyroid medication, and my thyroid suppression, which was 20 years long, ended.
So you also do not take your thyroid medicine. If you have someone with an elevated TSH, you just take all the fluoride out of the diet and don't keep them on their medication?
No, you don't go off your medication without supervision. You always need your doctor's cooperation to monitor you.
Well, is it safe to not be on the thyroid medicine while you're taking the fluoride out of your diet?
No, what you do is you stay on your thyroid medication and you have your doctor monitor you, and as you recover, then you reduce your thyroid medication.
Very good. Let me get to some, we have a million callers here. Let me get to one quick one here. Mary, you have a quick question for our guest, Alice?
Yes. I was wondering, does the fluoride have anything to do with the fibroid tumors that most black women get?
Fibroid tumors connection to fluoride. Is there
thyroid tumors?
Yeah, fibroid. Fibroid. Fibroid tumors. Because
leiomyomas.
Oh, I don't know. There could very well be, because previous research showed that fluoride interfered with fertility, and it promotes too much estrogen. And we know that estrogen stimulates the growth of fibroids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible. But again, these kinds of studies are not being done in America.
They're being done in Canada, though.
No, Canada is fluoridated, too.
Where are they being done?
They're being done in the rest of the world that sees fluoride as a toxin and as an endocrine disruptor and as a possible carcinogen.
We will be back. This is Wellness 101. I'm here with Dr. Rosa Kincaid, MD. Our guest is an RNCP, Alice Terpstra. She's joining us from Toronto. I see all of you on the line with lots and lots of questions. We'll be back. Stay with us. To the mall to visit your Sears, why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? Where else, where else indeed. Washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, everything that you need to make your house a home, your home a palace. Rock your world. Look, get on over to the only Sears in the city of St. Louis at Union and Natural Bridge. And when you get there, when you pick up your treadmill, when you pick up your tools, when you pick up your lawnmower, when you pick up what you need, tell them I told you to.
Last year, Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones were the leaders of not one fraudulent failed recall attempt in the 22nd Ward, but two. They paid workers in excess of $3,000 to get names on a petition by any means necessary. Can you believe it? More than 8 dead people's names were on those petitions. That's right, dead people. This disgusting act perpetrated the biggest voter fraud in the city of St. Louis, and it's still under investigation today. What were they thinking? Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones served the 22nd Ward for over 20 years. On their watch, major department stores like Woolworth and others along Martin Luther King Drive have left. Not only did the stores abandon our neighborhoods, so did Ozier and Jones. They had a bad habit of not returning phone calls, few community meetings, and no real concern for the residents. With this type of behavior, why should we believe anything that Jay Ozier and Kenneth Jones say? On March 6th, let's say no to Ozier. Stick with Boyd. Going backwards should not be an option.
Paid for by Citizens to Elect Jeffrey O. Boyd, Patrice A. Johnson, Boyd Treasurer.
Hello, I'm Minister Glenn Rogers, host of Radio UFO, Uncommon Facts and Observations. On my show, I've had some wonderful guests, like Dennis Balthaser, the coordinator of the 60th anniversary of the Roswell incident, Felix Clairvoyant, a priest with the Raelium Movement, an organization that believes that mankind was made from a higher civilization of mankind, and William Bill Burns, editor of UFO Magazine. Tune in for more Radio UFO every Tuesday and Saturday, 9 to 11 p.m. on AM 920, WGNU.
This is Sergeant Gary Wiggard. Don't touch that dial. Step away from the radio. Why? Because I'm next.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
The people, the issues affecting your life, right here, right now, on the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Wellness 101. My name is Liz Brown. I'm here with Dr. Rosa Kincaid, MD, and our guest joining us from Toronto, Alice Terpstra. She is an RNCP. Let me get to some of our questions out here. Harold, you have a question?
Yes, let me take off the speakerphone. Liz?
Yes.
Oh, my question, I enjoy your show. My question is this. If you speak about distilled water, my question is, when the mineral's not in the water no more, what are we going to do? Because you used to have zinc and iron and et cetera, et cetera. What are we do? Is that be more side effects? I mean, if we get the right minerals in our water if we drink distilled water.
Thanks for your question. Caller's concern is that stripping everything out of the water, he should be concerned about that.
Well, you should be getting that in your food. Mm-hmm. And we have our food workshops at the end of the month,
mm-hmm.
food and also supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to talk to Alice about one of the treatments for hypothyroidism is also to use selenium, zinc, and iodine to knock that that fluoride off those receptors. And can you speak on other dietary things that you can do to treat the fluoride toxicity?
Yes, I can. One of the worst things that fluoride does is to create free radical damage. So it's oxidative stress, and a lot of research points to degenerative diseases as being caused by oxidative stress. So with fluoride, you can sometimes even reverse damage with high doses of vitamin C and the antioxidant vitamins, but of course your best source is fresh whole foods. The fresher and the brighter colored, the better. That will give you your vitamin C, your minerals, your vitamin A precursors, and your B complexes.
Very good. Let me get to some of our other callers here. Kathy.
Yes, I have a question concerning my husband's working downtown, and he's using the water in new buildings, and he has complained for the last month, and I can see it every night. His hands are cracked, they are peeling, and he was just saying how horrible the water is. Is that from the fluoride content? And he was wondering, should he say something? These are new buildings that they're going to be renting out, and the water is unbelievable. His hands look horrible just since he's been working this 1 month downtown using that water.
Has he been drinking it?
No, he hasn't. I send bottled water with him.
Okay. Dr. Kincaid, you want to speak to that?
Well, there are other toxins in the water, and I recommend using a filter, even, you know, for showering and bath. And there are, when you have a shower on or even a bath, also there are different gases coming out of mm-hmm. the water. So,
and Alice, is this something that sounds like it could be a symptom of fluoride, or does it sound like it could be a symptom of something else?
Well, we know that putting fluoride in the water accelerates corrosion. So your pipes and fittings wear out faster as soon as you start adding fluoride to the infrastructure in your city. And the older your building, the older the pipes and the more corroded they are. So My guess is that it's old piping.
Hmm. Because a lot of these are lofts and stuff that they've gone into these old buildings that used to be industrial buildings, doing industrial stuff, and they're turning them into lofts. Mm-hmm. These were never places that were for people to live in. These were all buildings that were industry related.
Right.
Let me get to one more question here. Raj, you have a question.
Yes, I'd like to know how does fluoride affect people with eczema?
Okay. Does fluoride have an impact on exacerbation of eczema, creation of eczema, or any impact at all that you know of?
Yes, it does. In a certain percentage of people, fluoride can actually cause eczema. But more importantly, it affects your digestion so that you are more likely to be allergic to foods that cause eczema.
Mm.
So a lot of times people get off the fluoride, their digestion heals, and their eczema goes away without ever having to get rid of any of the what they thought were the offending foods.
Mm. And Dr. Kincaid, I want to talk to you about medical resistance, because some folks are going to listen to this show and they're going to get fired up and they're going to want to march into their doctor's office and they're going to want to say, you know, fluoride poisoning. I want you to examine me for this. I want you to treat me for this. Talk to us about what the people should expect when they walk into their doctor's offices armed with this information that they're getting this morning. What are some of the things that they should expect and some of the things that they should prepare for?
Well, I think with a lot of this, there's going to be some resistance. A lot of our dentists, of course, fluoride is one of the things that we use that's used to strengthen the teeth, and we're still having coatings. There's fluoride coatings that you put on the teeth, and I would say that there's probably going to be a lot of resistance to this, along with resistance to many of the innovative things that some physicians are trying to do. My first show, we had the American College of Advancement in Medicine. Some of those doctors and also life extension doctors are aware of these toxic loads causing so many problems. One of the things we didn't get to talk about was autism. So I think you need to find a physician like myself or Alice is a trained nurse who also, she's innovative, and she would be a great person to see.
But before we change our doctors, I mean,
yes.
what should people take with them into their doctor's offices to arm themselves? Okay, we expect the resistance, but what should they take as specifics of this is what I want you to do? Besides a whole change of attitude of you're in charge, not the doctor's in charge. So what should they do?
Well, we have Alice's book that will be out soon.
Mm-hmm.
We have a website with lots of research on it.
Well, what's the website? Alice?
It's the Second Look website and the fluoridealert.org website. They have...
Fluoridealert.org.
Yes, that's the Fluoride Action Network, and the one that I am affiliated with is Second Look. It's a nonprofit research organization, and that is slweb.org.
slweb.org.
And the SL stands for Second.
And Alice, I mean, you hear what I'm asking Dr. Kincaid about the resistance. It's out there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you can understand that a doctor who suddenly gets sideswiped by a patient who is so upset because here they've got this toxin in their water that's making them sick, and why don't you do anything about it? When the doctor has never been trained, there is simply the lack of awareness. And you can't blame doctors for something that they have never had an opportunity to learn. So it has to start with the awareness, and that's why our organization decided to put out this handbook for practitioners and doctors.
And we've been scared into this. I mean, you know, I was raised with, you know, you got to have fluoride for the teeth. You know, drink your water, it has fluoride in it. Where can people go to see the science of that it doesn't fit, that the advocacy of fluoride in your toothpaste is not science? Where would you recommend that people go to get that information?
The fluoridealert.org and the Second Look website have extensive bibliographies from the scientific research dating all the way back to
all the way back to what?
The 1930s.
The 1930s.
So that there have been medical people aware of fluoride health effects in the 1930s and documenting it since then. And the most recent one was the 2006 National Research Council report.
Very good. I'm going to have to let that be the last word. Alice Terpster, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Wellness 101.
My pleasure.
And this is Dr. Rosa Kincaid. My number is 314-644-0000.
All right.
See you next week.
See you next week.
From the homeland.
That's right. You're going to be going to Ghana, and you're going to be calling back and reporting to us from Ghana. What do we have to look forward to?
Oh, we're going to be visiting some clinics and natural healers. We're going to be visiting the medical school.
And
maybe some surprises, too.
All right. All right. Dr. Rosa Kincaid, thank you so much. And I look forward to, I'm a little envious. If I have a little attitude when I talk to you, it's because I want to be in Ghana, too. So understand that when we talk to you next week from the motherland.
Yes, ma'am.
The motherland. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. It's Friday. It's going to be an incredible week next week. Election day is next week. Many exciting things are going to be happening. You need to keep your ear and your eye tuned. Some stuff going to be going down next week. My name is Liz Brown. As always, thank you for listening. And you know the drill. Stay strong.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty.